Welcome. Could you all take your seats? Thank you very much. I call this meeting to order. My name is Myron Fox, and I am still the moderator at this annual town meeting. I declare a quorum present. Please turn off all cell phones. Any devices that make audible noise, please shut them off also. Please give your name and address each time you speak in order to assure a clear record. All who wish to speak, whether to ask or answer a question or make a comment, must first be recognized by me. All motions to amend must be delivered to me, the town clerk, and the staff at the computer or viewgraph in writing before they're made to the hall. If you do have a question about procedure, please raise your card and wait to be called upon, hopefully, and I will try to call on folks who haven't spoken very often. Only registered voters of the town and non-resident town employees and regional school employees, as well as state representatives, may speak without leave of the hall. Non-residents are required to sit in the last two rows in the back of the hall, to the left and to the right. Please remember that our bylaw requires presenters to speak for no more than a total of 10 minutes and speakers no more than a total of 5 minutes. Please remember no hissing, booing, whistling, clapping, or the like before, during, or after the time someone is speaking. Anybody who needs a warrant, please raise your hand. We'll have a Boy Scout bring it to you. Anybody need a warrant, raise your hand. One right here. Just there's some over there at that end. There's some right here in the middle. Keep your hands up, and they'll bring the warrant to you. I'm going to keep going. Bathrooms are across the hall from the floor of the auditorium. Fire exits are from both rear doors and each side of the stage in front. Boy Scout Mike runners today, again, from Troop 63. The scouts today are Liam Houston, Declan Ford, Colton Chung, and Parker Simon. Thank you very much. As was our custom, we got away from this a little bit the last couple nights, so I want to go back to the custom that we have in prior years. All questions from the floor should be addressed to me, not to any other individuals. I will, in most cases, ask the appropriate town official for an answer to your question. If you have more than one question, please ask them all at once when you got the mic, and then return the mic to the Boy Scout after you've asked all your questions and before you've received any answers. This will save considerable time because the Boy Scout will be ready for the next speaker right away after your questions have been answered without having to wait to have the mic passed all the way down through the aisle, the row. If your second question depends on the answer to your first question, then ask the second question in the alternative. For example, if the answer to question one is yes, why can't we do it? Why can't we do X and save money? And if the answer to my question is no, then why can't we do Y? So, again, ask all your questions at once. Pass the mic back to the Boy Scout. Also, I want to remind people about the call of the question in case folks misunderstand it. Unlike probably any other town in the Commonwealth, by tradition, we have allowed someone who is not recognized to shout out, call the question, when that person feels that the debate has taken long enough and they're ready for a vote. That call of the question is not subject to debate. If, in the sole opinion of the moderator, according to town meeting times, the moderator feels that insufficient debate has taken place, then I will put a hold on the call of the question. Otherwise, it's up to two-thirds of the voters in the hall to terminate debate. For the guide, as guidance to the folks voting on that two-thirds call of the question, I almost always ask how many people still wish to speak to add something new to the debate. And then maybe three or four or five people raise their hand. That is merely for guidance on the vote on the two-thirds call of the question. That is not an indication that I'm going to call on any of those six people, because by then it's no longer my judgment. It'll be the judgment of the hall whether or not to call the question. Once it gets two-thirds, no one else can speak. We go directly to the motion and vote on that. So we vote two-thirds on the call of the question. If that passes, we go immediately to the amendment or motion at hand and vote on that. No further debate. Who has a motion on Article 31, Community Preservation Funds, Historic Project? We're still among the CPC articles.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Jim Hill, 199 Concord Road, representing the Sudbury Historical Commission. I move in the words of the article with the sum of $162,500 appropriated.
Does that receive a second? It does. Sir.
Thank you. Tonight, the Sudbury Historical Commission has two proposed projects.
Jim, put the microphone in front of your face.
Okay. Mark, can you tell me which button? Thank you. The first presentation is for the Historic Cemetery Preservation in the amount of $150,000. And Rachel Goodrich will give a presentation on the Historic Monument Preservation for $12,500. This article, the cemetery request is to restore and preserve an additional approximately 150 grave markers in Sudbury's seven cemeteries during a multi-year restoration project. I won't read all the words. Please read up above me. Just want to tell you a little bit about what we've been doing with the cemeteries. We've brought in specialists who have restored the stones, set them straight up, cleaned them, put broken pieces back together, and we've done just some tremendous work so far on this. To date, we've been able to restore over 250 gravestones, foot markers and monuments, tomb doors, and the cemetery ironwork, thanks to the support of the selectmen, the town manager, FinCom, DPW, Trees and Cemetery Department, Community Preservation Commission, and, of course, the voters here at town meeting. Up above, I have a list of the seven cemeteries here in town for those who aren't familiar with them. Here's some examples of some of the work that needs to be done, as you can see. These were the ones up on Pantry Road. And then these are some additional. As you can see on the picture, to the your right, you can see as the stones are leaning over, once they hit about 30 degrees, they'll pretty much snap under their own weight. So what happens is they need to be removed, they need to be reset so that they won't break as the one on the left has done. Are there any questions on... No, not at this time. Okay.
Jim,
sorry, Mr. Moderator.
I'm the one who asked.
Very good. Okay. So what I'm going to do now is turn it over to Rachel Goodrich, who is a Sudbury resident who found something that needed to, or what she felt needed to be handled here in town, needed to be preserved. She went out and researched it. She then proposed the restoration of these stones or markers to a number of different boards here in town, and the Sudbury Historical Commission supports it greatly. Rachel?
Hi, my name is Rachel Goodrich. Oops, thank you. I am a 17-year resident of Sudbury, and for the past 2 years I've been researching the Sudbury monuments. And I'm here today as part of Article 31 to propose a $12,500 in the Community Preservation Funds to support the restoration and preservation of 8 of Sudbury's 10 monuments as part of the Sudbury Restoration Monument Restoration Project. The other two monuments have been preserved about 2 years ago through private donations. The mission of the project is to restore and preserve Sudbury monuments to allow them to properly honor all those that have served and died for their country, increase awareness and highlight the monuments as the treasures that they are, and lastly, to establish an annual inspection and a maintenance program to preserve the monuments for generations to come. Basically, you'll see that the monuments need to all be cleaned. There's a variety of them that need to be repointed. Plaques need to be resecured. There's a few plaques that need to be replaced. Some relettering needs to happen. Sorry?
Can you get a little closer to the mic?
Sure. Some relettering needs to happen, and you also see some iron work needs to be done at the Wadsworth Monument. As part of this project, I met with the town manager, the Department of Public Works, the Planning and Development, Park and Recreation, the Historic Commission, the Veterans Agent, and the 9/11 Memorial Garden Commission, and they all gave me support for this project. So I would greatly appreciate your support, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Rachel.
Excuse me, Jim, just for a second. Everybody who's standing along the aisles, would you take a seat, and I'll help you out. Anybody who has two seats available next to them, please raise your hand. So you can fill in right among all those. Jim, could you keep going?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Moderator. So in conclusion, we'd like to thank the voters of town meeting for their support in the past in preserving the rich history of Sudbury through CPA funding of the restoration and preservation of town-owned historic buildings, locations, and historic documents. This past year, we saw completion of multiple historic projects supported at past town meetings, including the historic cemetery map and ledger preservation, Hosmer House exterior painting, chimney and window restoration, town cemetery signage. I hope everyone has had a chance to see that, and it helps them find their way around. And then we've helped Sweet with their invasive plant disposal dumpster. Along with that, we just have continued progress on multiple ongoing projects, because many of these projects are not a 1, 2, 3 month project, but take time over a course of multiple years. And different members of our commission oversee each particular project individually. We're a very hands-on organization. You'll see in a article that's to come up that we're actually returning funds from the that we had been voted to us by town meeting before that we were able to not spend. We were able to get better pricing, and so we're actually returning money back into the CPA fund. So thank you.
Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Board of Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen recommends support.
Any discussion? Article 31. Please raise your hand. Yes, could you stand up, please?
Mr. Moderator, Rick Johnson, 38 Bent Road. A couple of years ago, there was an article similar to this to cover the cost of vandalism in some gravestones, and the perpetrator was caught, ordered to pay restitution. Can anyone tell me if that money was ever paid back?
Jim, do you know the answer?
Yes, I can.
Please.
The person was ordered to pay it back by the courts, but we have not received any money yet. The courts oversee this.
So we have no power at all to go get this money?
No, we don't.
So, Mr. Moderator, I don't know. How do we go about retrieving this money? Can anyone tell us that? Maybe Mr. Kenny or someone?
How to retrieve it? Well, we've been in contact. We attended the court case. We made presentation at the court case. The person was, he was effectively indigent, so he had no income. He was required as part of the hearing that he would have to pay us back once that happened. The money goes through the state. It does not come directly to us, and then they're to send it to us once they've received it. I've followed up a couple times with the court. It was over in Framingham. They've said that they have not received any money and that they'll, you know, it's an ongoing process, and that's the extent of where we are at this time.
Okay. So when was the last time we followed up on that?
Approximately a year ago.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Just as a reminder to the hall, from now on, when you get the mic, please ask all your questions at once and give the mic back to the Boy Scout. And then I'll attempt to get all those questions answered. Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 31? I see no one. This is a majority vote. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes by an overwhelming majority. We're now on Article 32. You want Andrea? One more? Another one? Do you have another one? Oh, no.
Mr. Moderator, Article 32, Community Preservation Fund, Bruce Freeman Rail Trail Design. Move in the words of the article with the sum of $150,000 appropriated from Community Preservation Act funds from FY15 revenue and the sum of $27,684.65 to be transferred from Article 24 of the 2007 annual town meeting BFRT base map and the sum of $24,807.50 to be transferred from Article 27 of the 2009 annual town meeting BFRT concept plan.
Does that receive a second? It does. Simon?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I see. Thank you. I think I got it. Goal 8 of the Board of Selectmen meeting in August 2013 was to move forward with the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail. There was a vote taken at that meeting, and the vote was to approve that the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail in Sudbury, from the Concord Sudbury line to the crossing of the Mass Central right-of-way near Union Avenue, be designed to Massachusetts Department of Transportation standards. Please note that this vote by the board was for design, not construction. The goal of what has been called the 25% design is to ensure that a project is constructible, determine the impacts, environmental, historic, right-of-way, and to determine the cost of construction. This 25%, or what I call initial design study, has several components. It takes into account and prepares preliminary designs, the preliminary right-of-way, preliminary construction cost estimates, categorical exclusion checklist, early environmental coordination report. It takes into account a traffic report, wetland flagging, and an abbreviated notice of resource area delineation. Also, the type selection of worksheets and sketch plans for the two railroad trestles is taken into account. This is a great deal of work, and it is the foundation for any rail trail which will come as a result of the design being done, whatever type, whether it's a full build, what I call mass standard rail trail, or it could also be something different, such as a greenway. The cost of the initial design study for the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail from the border at Concord-Sedbury Line to the crossing of the Mass Central, which is right by the AAA limousine business on Union Avenue, is about $250,000. How will that be paid? There are two sources of funding already available. One is a gift of $58,700 from the Friends of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail, which was unanimously accepted by the Board of Selectmen just last month. The second is unused CPA Community Preservation Act funds from prior years, which I read as part of the article. That totals $52,492. Adding those together, it means that we have $111,192, which are already there and donated and ready to be used. The cost of the initial design study of $250,000, we take from that the funds available and leaves the balance of $138,808. The Board of Selectmen asked for $150,000 from the Community Preservation Committee, which was voted. And we asked for slightly more than the $138,000 to give a little bit of a cushion in case the estimate for the 25% design study came in a little high. The vote tonight will have no impact on your taxes or on the town's debt service. The funds are available through the CPC. I'm just making sure I have the right slide up there. I'm not quite positive. All six towns to the north of Sudbury on the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail have had to decide what kind of rail trail to design and build. Everyone has chosen the MassDOT standard. There are several reasons. First, the cost of construction of the rail trail is paid for 100% by state and federal funds. No cost to the town, and that includes bridges, road crossings, the type of surface which goes onto it, a delineation, wetlands, flagging, and so forth. Another reason is that the timing of the construction for Sudbury has moved up dramatically by about 10 years. With approval of this request and the gift from the Friends of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail, construction in Sudbury could begin as early as 2016 because the southernmost part of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail in Concord ends in the woods. The Department of Transportation wishes to have their terminus or the end at a road. Therefore, they are willing to bring it down 1/2 mile to Route 117 right near Davis Field. It is the Department of Transportation's desire to do this, and they have told us at a meeting just 3 weeks ago that it can be done. The rest of the trail south of that will take longer. Other reasons that those towns have gone with the MassDOT standard are safety, usability, accessibility, maintenance, both ease and cost, and for protection of the environment and wetlands. Going back to construction costs for a moment, those costs would be paid for entirely by state and federal funds, removal of the rails, grading and subsurface preparation, a redecking of two bridges, which would cost about $90,000 apiece. The Road crossings, particularly at Route 27 and at Route 117, are important. They have to meet special standards. They're very expensive, perhaps $100,000 each. The road, rail trail will be ADA compliant, and it will be a hard surface, which is desirable for virtually all functions. Also, the MassDOT standard meets high quality construction standards, which is not always true if the work is done to a lesser standard. If this rail trail had to be paid for, built to the high standards, which will last a long time, with safety for residents using the trail and for access for emergency vehicles onto the trail, which will happen, the cost would be about $6 million. So Sudbury can get this lasting, useful for generations amenity for all citizens of all ages for what will be about $500,000 or perhaps $600,000. This slide shows the section of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail which has been completed, phase one, shown with the red arrow. This is what it looks like. And you can see that people on bicycles with carriages standing two abreast or three abreast can pass each other in comfort and safety without someone having to jump off the trail or be in danger of being hit by someone passing in the same or the opposite direction. In regard to usability, it's for all types of bicycles, not just mountain bikes with the thick tires. It would be best for seniors who need a firm, stable surface throughout, right to the edges, baby carriages, wheelchairs, and for all types of walkers and runners. And for those who may have been riding a bike in the street, you may have had some close calls, as I have. If you're a runner, you're running in the street, you may have had some close calls as well. This will give the residents a safe place to get their exercise and, more than that, to move about town, which we want you to do with your legs or your bicycle or a stroller or whatever, rather than having to get into your car and drive all the time. These sections, the design has been completed. At the top of the green arrow, construction will begin in Acton next spring and in Concord to the south in 2016. Again, this is an advancement of about 10 years in what had thought was the design and build schedule, because this project is a priority of MassDOT, and this is a very fine time to be moving forward with that. The environment for funding is great. The blue part
Mr. Simon?
Yes.
The 10 minutes is up, so how much longer do you have? Approximately how much time are you looking for?
I'm looking for about four or 5 minutes.
It's up to the hall. The hall wish to give Mr. Simon 4 or 5 minutes to finish his speech. All those opposed, please continue.
Thank you. What we're talking about tonight is funds for the design phase in Sudbury, from the Concord-Sudbury line down to the AAA limousine. This is where the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail in Sudbury would run. You can see Concord at the top, and along the sides in the red dots are the locations of schools, athletic facilities, churches, public facilities, parks, the fire headquarters, the Chiswick Park area, and the commercial district. This is a central artery for Sudbury, not for cars, but for those of you who want to walk it or to ride it or to stroll or push a baby carriage or to bring your visitors through when they come to visit you from out of town to show them just how beautiful and lovely Sudbury really is. This is what used to be called the other side of the tracks. Now it is a magnificent view, which we simply don't have access to because it's not a safe place to go along those areas. Groups in town which have supported the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail built to MassDOT standards include the Council on Aging, the Commission on Disabilities, the Park and Recreation Commission, the CPC voted those funds in January, unanimous by the Board of Selectmen, and one of the preeminent environmental organizations, the Sierra Club, has also supported it. The construction timetable has been moved up about 10 years. Originally, it was thought to be 2025 or later, but with this advancement, construction could begin here in 2016, when the southernmost part of the Concord Rail Trail is built to MassDOT standards. Bruce Freeman is high on the list of tip priorities for funding. There is strong political support from our state senators and representatives. And this is no longer something, well, don't go for it, don't let it happen, it's too far away. It can be on our doorstep. It can be here in 2 years with your support. The town 3 weeks ago met with MassDOT Division 3 in Worcester. We asked a lot of questions. Our town planner was there. Bill Place from the Department of Public Works was there. Pat Brown, selectman-elect, was there. Debbie Dineen from the Conservation Commission was present, the conservation coordinator. And one of the questions we asked is, has this moved up in the TIP process? And what you see on the screen aren't my words. They are the words from the town planner. And you can see that those projects have been accelerated on the TIP, which is the transportation funding. Right now is the most favorable climate. And in Acton, the construction will begin in a year or less in the spring of 15. And MassDOT also wishes to complete the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail. And this is on their list of priorities on the way to connecting with the Mass Central crossing. In the in that same report, there was a discussion of why we should have this 25% or this initial design study. And what came out of it was that this study will provide is the next necessary step to get the necessary technical details in determining the parameters and impact of rail construction. So this design study is what we need to know. It's the questions we need to ask. It will give us the information of determining what can be done and whether it is feasible to build a standard rail trail from the Concord line right down to almost downtown Sudbury. This is what the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail will look like when it's completed. It will be 25 miles long from the towers in Lowell and will all go all the way down to Framingham. The southernmost part, the last 3.4 miles, this had been in question for a while. I can tell you that there's been very good news. The legislature, in its bond bill, has asked for $700,000 to buy the southernmost part of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail, the part in Framingham, and the northernmost part in Sudbury. So while it is not complete, there is movement towards achieving that goal. Then you can go from here about 20 miles north or about 5 miles south. A word about maintenance. A paved surface, which is what all of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail will be from the Concord border north to Lowell is a paved surface. It's most economical to maintain. That asphalt paved surface will last 20 to 30 years. Importantly, when it needs servicing in the future or maintenance, those funds can come from Chapter 90 funds for highway maintenance. Also, the paved trail provides good access for emergency vehicles as well as service vehicles for mowing, sweeping, and so forth. The last slide I have gets to the issue of, can the rail trail be built, or can something be built using the rails, the iron rails, which are currently present? And again, this is from the notes of our meeting three weeks ago when Mr. Place, director of DPW, asked the DOT officials, will DOT allow Iron Horse to remove the rails? And their response was this. Typically...
Excuse me. We've been through another 4 or 5.
Okay.
8 minutes.
30 seconds?
30 seconds. Finish up, please.
Their response was typically... DOT does not give the rails away. Their contractor removes the rails, stockpiles them, and the funding from those is used for removal of the rails and ties. This is a project which will benefit all residents of town for generations to come. It's economical. The amount we're asking for now is very reasonable. There will be further studies in the future. They will not be expensive, no more than $250,000, I anticipate. I ask for your support. We've waited a long time for this, and now is the time when the vote comes to raise your card and say yes to the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail in Sudbury. Thank you.
We still have some people standing and sitting in the aisles. The fire chief won't permit that. So if you have two seats next to you, could you please raise your hand? We're not quite ready to open the balcony yet, so I need to fill this place first. There's a whole bunch of seats right here in front. So could you raise your hand if you have two seats next to you? Folks standing, could you move into those seats? I see 10 or 12 seats right here alone, and there's two. So there's still about 35 seats here. Thank you. Finance Committee for a report.
The Finance Committee does not support this article. I would note, though, that it was a split vote. Two members were in favor, five against, and two members were absent the evening of the vote.
Okay. Board of Selectmen.
We're in favor of this, Mr. Moderator.
Is your mic on?
We're in favor of this, Mr. Moderator.
Okay. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 32? The Board of Selectmen said that they support the FinCom said they did not support it. The split vote was two in favor, five against, and two were not present. Okay? So, anybody wish to be heard on this? Yes, sir. Andy, you got to come up to the mic or use that mic, either way.
Andrew Sullivan, 28 French Road, here in Sudbury. Motion to amend the article after the words DOT, Mass DOT standards, to add including a greenway design.
Does that receive a second? Okay. Mr. Sullivan?
Thank you. I have a presentation.
Yeah.
5 minutes.
Andrew Sullivan, 28 French Road, here in Sudbury. I think that most people in this hall want a rail trail in the corridor known as the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think that the Greenway option has been under-investigated and the due diligence hasn't been done in terms of that option. A Greenway is a rail trail, just like a MassDOT standards trail is a trail. It's really just a trail that can be paved over later. a MassDOT standards trail requires a lot more funding, a lot more planning, a lot more design work. It simply takes a lot more time to build. So the idea behind Greenways would be it's a wonderful way to jumpstart rail trail development here in Sudbury. We can get them done in the short term while we're waiting for these design studies to move forward for a MassDOT standards or full build rail trail. You can go to the next page, or I'll take it quicker. Thank you. There you go. Thank you. All right, so this is a picture of a greenway in Danvers that the nonprofit Iron Horse Preservation Society put in last year.
You have
year
to speak into the mic.
Sorry. It's a 10-foot-wide paved, or 10-foot-wide rolled stone dust trail. It is ADA compliant. It allows for a safe passage in both directions, as well as handicap access. Here's the mechanics or the math.
Andrew, pull the mic to the side.
Awesome. Thank you. Here's the mechanics for a greenway design. So the timetable for a greenway could be built as soon as 2016. By taking some of these funds that are being allocated towards a MassDOT standards trail, which would take 5 to 6 years to complete the design study process and then go to the TIP, which is the Transportation Infrastructure Program, we could be putting in the greenway in the near term while playing catch up on some of the environmental issues and so forth that you've got to go through to put in a MassDOT standards trail. We believe that greenways can be comfortably constructed within the town's wetland bylaws, and we keep control of the construction project in the town of Sudbury instead of being dictated to by the Department of Transportation. So what does Iron Horse do? How do they do it? Iron Horse Preservation Society takes the steel rails and they sell them for the salvage value. In turn, they remove the wooden ties. They regrade that disturbed area, that roughly 10 or 12 foot elevated area. They install a 3 foot inch thick of rolled stone dust ADA compliant surface. They redeck the bridges and install railings with pressure treated wood. So all of that could be done in kind of prepping these trails in the short term for a longer term MassDOT project. I'll note that all of that construction is done at zero cost by Iron Horse with the salvage value of the rails. What costs money is the engineering analysis and the permitting and so forth. Sudbury Greenways has engaged a very well-known rail trail environmental engineering firm called Beta Environmental, and their engineering quote, which is up on the website, says that that'll cost $300,000 to fully engineer and do all the permitting and so forth. So what does that include? A lot of the same stuff that a MassDOT standards engineering situation would include. It includes wetlands delineation. It includes CONSCOM here in Sudbury and MassDEP permitting, erosion controls, engineering design, ADA layout, safe road crossings, which, of course, is very important to our public safety officials, surveying, and any other product management that would be associated with it. In terms of the cost of a MassDOT rail trail, as Selectman Simons mentioned, it's about $500,000 for the full design of a MassDOT trail. They're very expensive, and they're very expensive because they're being built to transportation standards. You're not really building a trail, you're building a road. I believe the estimate is $1.2 million per mile, and that's why the town has to go out and seek state and mostly federal transportation funds. The funding comes through federal transportation bills. I'm going to skip here and not take too much of your time. What I understand in terms of the timing is there's a 2-year period to do the 25% design phase, a 2-year period for the 75, and a 1-year period for the full construction. So perhaps you could change 2021 to maybe 2019 when the remainder, not the northern half mile that Selectman Simons was talking about, but the remainder of the trail that mostly exists in Sudbury would actually be worked on. That would be obviously hinge on us getting that transportation funding, and while that may be more probable, you never know with the economy, with deficits, and how things work out, and promises that are made by elected officials to do so and to help out with that. So,
Andy, the 5 minutes are up. How much longer do you have?
I could rush through in 2 more minutes.
2 more minutes. Does the hall wish to give Mr. Sullivan 2 more minutes? All those opposed, go right ahead.
Thank you. So in my mind, I don't think it makes a lot of strategic sense for the town to have a MassDOT standards trail as a first step, and we should be installing greenways as a first step and a MassDOT standards trail secondarily. There's another component to this that has been debated a little bit in town, and that's the environmental piece of it. I think it's pretty clear that a greenway-style rail trail is far less environmentally impactful than a full-build trail. You're moving a lot less earth. There's no doubt about that. We're not mandating. We have a lot of mandates in Sudbury. We get those with schools or police station buildings. It's something that you want to be careful of because usually it relates to higher cost. You're doing a lot less tree cutting because the flat surface does not need to be mandated to be 14 or 15 feet, I believe it is. A greenway finished surface is ADA compliant, American with Disabilities Act compliant, and it's pervious, meaning water can flow through it, and the need for stormwater management is less. In contrast, MassDOT standards trails will not take into consideration Sudbury's wetlands bylaws or stormwater management. They cannot do so because, by law, the way they're engineering it has to be to federal transportation standards. So I think that a great way to approach this would be install a greenway, which is less environmentally impactful, and have that conversation in terms of the much heavier environmental impacts associated with a full-build trail. We've already kind of gone through this. The most important point is the second point, the town citizens, planning and development, and DPW, who would run the development, would all have input on the trail, not just Mass Highway engineers. No fault of theirs. I will skip this, go to the last slide. It's a common sense in my mind that you take the low cost, short term, and certainly more dependable or more certain way of installing a rail trail first, and you work on the longer term, more complicated, more expensive version after the fact. In no way, absolutely no way, does installing a greenway, whether it's in the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail or the Mass Central Rail Trail or other rail trail in town, preclude us from working on a larger trail after the fact. So I believe it's a logical first step, and we should move on this as soon as possible so we can all enjoy these trails, whether we're getting out there as senior citizens or we're getting out there with young families with kids. We voted in favor of this 2 years ago. Let's take action and start working on them instead of entering into just a long-term design study process. Thank you.
Okay. State law requires that we ask the CPC, the Community Preservation Committee in the town of Sudbury, under Chapter 44B, if they had a recommendation. I want them to get the benefit of listening to Mr. Sullivan's presentation, not only his amendment. So now, does someone from the CPC, the chair of the CPC, Mr. Morley, the question is, does the CPC have an affirmative recommendation on this amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Unfortunately, we didn't see this presentation. An actual article or a proposal was not brought before us. The proposal before us was the selectman's proposal, The proposal that was brought to the CPC was the selectman's article, that is the article before you tonight. We did not hear about this until recently. I actually discussed it when I presented it to the FinCom. Mr. Sullivan brought up his idea. The CPC never had a presentation of this. We never had a proposal, like a separate proposal, that argued against the proposal we had. And we did discuss it because we had heard about it at our last meeting before tonight. And, you know, we try to be very deliberate, and there's a very large process that's laid out in a document that we follow. And we don't want to do things on the fly on town meeting floor. So we have not voted to support this amendment if an amendment came. So I think that's the answer.
Lengthy
answer.
Okay. I will now ask town council for an opinion under Chapter 44B whether the lack of an affirmative recommendation from the CPC prohibits this amendment from going forward under state law.
Mr. Moderator, the lack of an affirmative recommendation under Chapter 44B will prevent this motion from amendment from going forward.
Okay. The opinion of the town council that this amendment cannot go forward, so we'll go back to the main motion now. Does anyone wish to be heard under the main motion? Could you stand up, please? And can we come around this side and give him a mic? Out front. Come right in front. There you go. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Peter Kramer. I'm at 40 Singletary Lane. I'd just like to hear from FinCom what the split was and how it broke down.
It was, I mentioned that earlier.
Two
members were in favor, five were against, two were not present.
I would like to know the reasons, in summary, for each side, for opposition and for approval.
Each side. Okay. Can I have one member of the majority tell us why they were in favor against this, and then one member of the minority telling us why they're the opposite?
So five members, including myself, voted against this, and I think the primary reason behind it is that there was a lot of information and a lot of misinformation floating around about both the Bruce Freeman Trail as well as the Greenway, and I think we all felt there needs to be a lot more study done in order to get an understanding of what is actually the case. And I don't think it was for or against either of the options, but rather seeking more information before we commit this amount of money to it.
Can a member of the minority give us their report, please?
Yes.
Can you get closer to the mic? Can't hear you.
Yes. The night of the vote, there was seven present. It was a 5-2 vote. Across the nine members of the committee, there were three in favor and three who were in favor. Well, if you count across the nine, if you go across the nine, it'd be three and four.
No, it's only the people who were present that day.
Okay, of the ones that were present that night, it was only two. The reasons being that they felt it was for the long-term good of the town, and also keep in mind it is a design study, okay? As has been pointed out, it will provide the impact on the environment, the historical impact, the right-of-way impact. So since it's a design study, it isn't a final decision. It is a design study that provides considerable useful information.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard? Could you stand up, please? No. Can we just get a mic? Passing it to you now. And we also need your name and address for the record.
Kevin Matthews, Haynes Road. I'd like to hear from the FinCom if, with that addition of that language, which in my mind makes it more study versus less, and may even find a consensus in the town, which I think would be politically helpful, is to include, and I would beg the CPC to reconsider. I think putting that language in would help us all find the right solution for Sudbury, and everybody would walk away from the table having thoroughly investigated this versus having an outside group promote only one plan only. For some political agenda where we need to find our own solution. And if it is a paved road, if we all agree at that at the end, then I think it's much better than if we have a divisive process and we exclude a alternative that's viable at the very beginning because of a technicality that they didn't present this to the CPC.
We're not going to ask the Finance Committee the question about the Greenway because the amendment can't go forward. We're only talking about, from now on, we're talking about the main motion. It's a good idea or it's a bad idea. Vote yay or nay. Yes, sir. Could you stand up? Can we get a mic in front?
I'm John Seeger, 26 Whispering Pine Road. Mr. Moderator, I have five separate questions. Would you like me to list them or list them? The first question is, as a Sudbury voter who tries to follow events, I have had no opportunity that I can recall to vote on which of these alternatives, the rail trail from Bruce Freeman's group or the Greenway, I prefer. I would like to know why there has been no previous opportunity, unless it was just my missing it. Second question, any evidence backing up the safety of asphalt paving over crushed stone road? My wife and I observed a terrible accident on the Lexington walkway when a speeding racing bicycle struck a 9-year-old girl who was trying to learn how to ride a bike. I would like to know whether any of the law enforcement agencies keep track of that kind of accident. When we cared for the 9-year-old girl, there was no report of that accident, to my knowledge, to the Lexington police. Third question. Is there evidence that the federal-state cost support will still exist? Sunday's Boston Globe had the headline story, "Inaction in D.C. imperils state highway projects." If there is no money available to the federal or state authorities, then who would complete construction? Fourth question, would the Greenway completion be a help if we decided later, when we saw more confidence that the money would be available, would the Greenway get in the way of the full paved roadway, or would it be, in effect, a first step? Last question has been answered. It was why no FinCom support for the Bruce Freeman Trail.
Okay. Can you kindly just pass the mic back to the Boy Scout? Mr. Simon, we can go one at a time. First question. You didn't have a chance to vote on the DOT standards or Greenway standards. How come?
There were several votes 2 years ago, at which time the voters were asked whether they wanted to have a recreational rail trail built in Sudbury. And one vote was here at town meeting, and one was at the ballot. At town meeting, Mr. Williamson argued in favor of a standard rail trail. There was an individual, Pat Brown, who argued in favor of a greenway. And the vote was yes, that the town does want a rail trail. I understand that that was indicative of the town wanting to move ahead with the proposal for that, because Ms. Brown argued against voting for that motion, which would have meant no, the town doesn't want that. The same two questions were asked at the ballot, and the results were the same, both overwhelmingly by more than 60%. In addition, one of the questions asked was the town wanted to accept an offer of what was then $50,000 from the Friends of the Bruce Freeman, which has been increased to over $58,000, for the purpose of designing, as we're doing tonight, designing a standard rail trail on the Bruce Freeman corridor. And the town voted overwhelmingly, or more than 60, more than 2 out of 3. Yes, they did want to accept the money from the Friends for the design to MassDOT standards. That was the first question.
Second question is the safety of asphalt against it not being asphalt.
I have ridden my bicycle on both. I was up at the Wachusett Greenways. I've been on that, which is a stone dust that has a number of ruts in it. There are parts which get washed out. It requires quite a fair amount of maintenance. Over the years, the brush grows in through it from the edges. It's difficult to maintain. As my wife and I were riding, we came to a part which was not even, and my wife had a small slip. She's fine. But it indicated to me that with that type of surface, it is not as safe. Also, there's someone in the hall here who has ridden, who on stone dust, it was very uneven. It got washed out. It had ruts in it. The gentleman fell and broke his hip. I would also say that if I am recommending and would prefer, as would the Council on Aging and others, an asphalt surface, I don't want this to be a speedway by any means. I would like to see a reasonable limit placed on what would be how fast you can ride your bike there. I don't want kids or anybody else getting hit or a rider being out of control in that way. So I hope that answers your question, sir.
The next question was how do we know that the federal state cost financial support still will exist at the complete construction?
In our meeting with MassDOT 3 weeks ago, we were told that this funding has moved up. There's no guarantee for any funding anywhere, ever, at any time, from state or federal. However, the environment has been much more favorable for funding the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail because it is part of what is called the Bay State 100. Both the Bruce Freeman and the Mass Central, which goes east-west, are both on that list, and they are priorities, and they have moved up in the list. You get onto the list, but you don't stay at the bottom. If you're a priority, you move towards the top of the list, and the Bruce Freeman has received that preferential treatment in the past couple of years. So no guarantees, but it looks very good for us.
And I think the last question, which I'm going to give to someone else, is that the Greenway construction be a help or a hindrance to a MassDOT standards or the paved standards? Was that the question? Okay. This is the one and only time I'm going to ask, because the Greenway amendment did not go forward. But given that that question was asked, I'll try to get an answer from it. I understand that there's someone from Iron Horse Preservation. Sir, are you a resident of the town of Sudbury? Okay. So you need a majority of the vote in order to answer the question. All those in favor of this gentleman answering the question? All those opposed? Could you stand there? Could you get a mic over to that gentleman? Did you understand the question, sir?
Yes.
Okay.
My name is Joe Hatrip. I am the president of Iron Horse Preservation. We've done 30 miles in Massachusetts. And the answer to the question is the plus side is that the railroad ties and the steel would be removed at no cost. And it gives them a jump start to what they're going to do. Our method also does have the environmental procedures for most of the requirements that the Bruce Freeman Trail has as well. So it's not being neglected. So it is saving money. And it is speeding the process up quite a bit.
Okay. Anyone else wish to speak on this article? I'm sorry? No, I know what the question was. I thought he did answer the question. The question was, will the Greenway construction be a help or a hindrance to a paved way? Did you not answer that question?
Yes, I did.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Okay.
Anybody else wish to be heard?
Wait, sounds like it.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I'm Jack Ryan, Chair of the Council on Aging, and it has been mentioned a couple of times. I just wanted to confirm that the Council on Aging did vote in favor of the article as proposed. One of the primary reasons was safety. Mr. Simon mentioned that for folks, especially in their 70s and 80s, who like to get out and walk, and remember, this rail trail would be exclusively theirs between the hours of about 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. for the months of September, except, of course, on snow days. And I suppose I could speak to Superintendent Wilson about whether we could get some of those canceled. The idea is that obviously for older people who, even those who don't walk with assistance, they need a stable surface and surface to walk, and it's great exercise for older people as they get older to keep themselves physically active. But they want to keep themselves physically active in a place that is safe for them to walk, where they don't run the risk of falling. In addition, several seniors don't use just bicycles. Many of them use bicycles, and they use them, but they don't ride very fast. They use bicycles. Some of them use what are called tricycles. They're large three-wheeled bicycles, and those also require much more stability than even a two-wheeled bike, and they're less maneuverable. Some of the seniors also push their grandchildren in strollers along these things, again in the morning, perhaps while mom and dad are at work, and want stability not only for themselves but also obviously for the child they're working. A greenway surface, even though it is smooth when it starts, can become rutted, and even as smooth as it is, has slight can have imperfections in it, where when you're an older person, your legs and knees just aren't as stable as they used to be. Safety was one of the primary reasons that the Council on Aging supported the idea of going with a paved rail trail. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on the subject? Right over there, could you stand up?
Pat Brown, 34 Whispering.
Whoa. Not speak in a little louder voice, but not so close to you.
Pat Brown.
Yes.
Pat Brown, 34 Whispering Pine Road. I'd just like to clarify that when I spoke on the rail trail article in 2012, that I was not asked to speak in favor of a greenway, and there was, in fact, no presentation of a greenway at that time. I'd also like to point out that greenways were not discussed by the Rail Trail Conversion Advisory Committee. In fact, five members of the nine at-large members appointed by the board were friends, and so greenways never came up. So if you look at our minutes, you will not find them discussed or evaluated because we didn't do that. I had a comment from the Mass... I had a comment from the April 17th meeting where we met with MassDOT, and MassDOT did in fact say it would take 25% design would take about 2 years. And so I fail to see how we would be done with the 25% design in 2016. And finally, I'd like to point out that in 2011, the Friends of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail supported a grant article. This was a grant article to extend the rail trail in Westford. It was using Iron Horse. And the Friends supported it. The Selectmen supported it. The legislators supported it. Everyone was in favor of this. This was not viewed as precluding continuing with the MassDOT design. In fact, it was considered a first step. So just so everybody knows. Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes, in the front. Let's just stand up. Can't see you. Go ahead.
Hello, Bob Armour, 21 Brookside Farm Lane. I guess my feeling is that we need to have a bias for action here, and that either of these approaches would be, I think, a significant benefit to our town. So my question, or I guess my thinking is, you know, makes sense probably to follow through with this Bruce Freeman Rail Trail consistent with what other towns are doing, strike while the iron's hot and try to move it forward. But I'd like, if Mr. Moderator would allow, both Mr. Sullivan and Mr. Simon to comment on the possibility of fast-tracking the greenway approach for the east-west rail that runs along 20 in parallel.
Can you answer that?
Mr. Armour, as I understand it, you're asking about, well, can somehow the east-west be fast...
Len, into the
Excuse
mic.
Me, I beg your pardon. Mr. Armour, am I correct in understanding that you're asking about the east-west rail trail, sometimes called the Mass Central Rail Trail? That's different than the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail.
I understand. Okay.
Sure. Yes. There have...
Yes. You're correct. Your name and address for the record?
Sorry, Mark Kemlak, 46 Poplar.
Okay. Hang on. Just let me finish this. He's absolutely correct. That has nothing to do with this question of him. Did somebody call a question back there? Does that receive a second? Okay. Hang on. Just for the guidance of the hall, all those who wish to speak and add new information to what's been said, please raise your hands. Looks like about a dozen or so people who still wish to speak. That's for the guidance of the hall. I'm going to ask for a vote on the call of the question, as I explained earlier in the evening. It requires a two-thirds vote to go forward. If that passes, we're going to go to an immediate vote on this motion. That's on the view graph. All those in favor of the call of the question signify by raising your hands. Those opposed, it gets well more than two-thirds. We're now on the main motion. Can we have that on the view graph? Excuse me. On the call of the question, we don't call it. It was fairly overwhelming. It wasn't even close. We're now going to move on to the motion as shown on the view graph. I'm going to ask all those in favor of the motion signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes by a very, very large majority. It required a majority vote. Article 33. Can I have a motion, please? Who's, are you making the motion? Please take your seats while we go through the next article. Mr. Woodard?
My name is Chuck Woodard. I'm with the Board of Selectmen. Move in the words of the article with the sum $150,000 appropriated.
Does it receive a second? It does. Mr. Woodard?
Okay. Waiting for the PowerPoint to come up. Jody, I just want you to point out the Concord line and Route 117 so people can see where it is. Yeah, I was just talking to Jody. Hey, Rodney, do you want to advance it to the picture? Okay, so here's the property we'll be discussing. Jody's going to point out the red line is the Concord line. The property's on Route 117 on the Concord line, and in the right-hand picture you can see where Route 117 is relative to the property. In November 2013, the Board of Selectmen voted a goal to investigate the development of rental housing on the Malone property to make meaningful progress toward the town's 10% obligation for affordable housing. Under state law, until we reach the 10% state-mandated goal under Chapter 40B, developers can bypass local zoning, so we are unable to prohibit unsuitable development. The goal was voted to remove the threat of developments that are out of scale with our residential neighborhoods, unsuitable in many areas of Sudbury, and which do not conform to our local regulations. Essentially, the board has heard from residents that developments similar to Johnson Farm were not acceptable in Sudbury's neighborhoods. The Malone property provides a unique opportunity for the town to meet that 10% requirement and put this behind us. If the town takes this approach, we can control the development since we own the property. We can control the location, the style, the size, and the occupancy of any development there. Otherwise, we are vulnerable to private development taking place wherever, in whatever style, and overriding local regulations until, if ever, we reach that 10%. So what is the proposal? The project that we're asking for money to investigate the sale of this Malone property, which is owned by the town, to a developer to build a predominantly age-restricted rental development with 25% affordable units and 75% market rate units. possibly as an alternative, a continuing care retirement community with similar affordability, or some other use that might be identified during the public process which will be initiated if this article passes. The development must be rental because then all units count toward our 40B goal, even though only 25% are affordable. We are looking to make this development budget positive, which will be controlled by age restrictions, unit sizes, and style of development. In other words, low number of children. Housing units without children mean no additional education costs, so they are budget positive. But let me add, I love my kids. We all love our kids. But Sudbury's principal budget problem is the large proportion of households with school-aged children. We have had some studies on this property in the past. The GPR engineering study in 2011 looked at soils, wetlands, and other physical properties and confirmed that the property is developable. The Koff study, which the summary is shown on the screen, the Koff study in 2012 gave us information on the value of the land under certain development scenarios. Our next step is to more fully investigate the property for rental housing as the means to get to our 40B goal. So what will we do with the money requested in this article? We need further study. We've had two studies, but we still need a lot more. We still need to know a lot more. We need to see what is economically and physically feasible along with what is appropriate for Sudbury. The more we know about the property, the better informed we will be about its possibilities to solve our 40B challenge before we go to sell it. And no developer will be willing to sink millions of dollars into this property without knowing a lot more about it than is now known. We've developed an outline of the steps necessary to complete the project from now through the sale, if that is the eventual outcome. And we anticipate that this process would take 2 to 3 years. We'll be guided by a consultant with experience in the design, permitting, and construction of multifamily projects. We need a lot of important decision in order to make this decision, so we'll start with first a public process. Guided by this consultant, we'll get input from boards and residents on the best uses for the property. We're not smart enough to have thought of all the issues that might come up, and so the more input, the better. This will help us frame the parameters of development. There will be a wetlands delineation, and there will be a Phase 1 site investigation. After going through this, the consultant will develop 3 massing diagrams to show how the property might be developed so that further analysis can be focused on particular solutions. Again, these could include all senior rental, a continuing care retirement community that included both senior rental and assisted living, or some combination of senior rental and family housing structured to limit the school children impact. For each of these 3 scenarios, we will have information on water consumption, wastewater generation, traffic generation. Is that 5 minutes or 5? Thank you. Traffic generation and zoning relief required, if any. Field test pits and perk tests will be conducted to estimate soil permeability rate, which will have an impact on the wastewater treatment options and thus the number of units we can put there. And most importantly, a market evaluation of the doable options. Additional votes at town meeting will be necessary to dispose of the property. All we're doing now is studying, getting information before we come back to town meeting with a proposed solution, if we get to a proposed solution we think is acceptable. And we're also at the same time, we're watching Wayland because they're building a project on the Sudbury line on Route 20 called River's Edge, which has got some characteristics similar to what we have in mind. They're 2 to 3 years ahead of us, and we think we can benefit from their experience. So here's the math when we get to 40B. If 250 units are built at Malone, we meet the 10% goal. That goal will be reset in 2020 because the 10% requirement is calculated by the state after each federal census, so it changes every 10 years. So in the future, and in the event Johnson Farm is not built, we might need another 40 units to get back to 10%. Might. That is much, much better than the alternative we have now. It means that prior to 2020, we could avoid further 40B developments. And after 2020, worst case, possibly have to deal with one or two of them. So I think I said last night I don't like to read slides, but this one I think is important enough to read. The Board of Selectmen has some key objectives for this project, and I think it's very important that you understand what we're buying into here. The project needs to be privately built, owned, and operated. This is not going to be the town getting into the development business. It needs to meet our 40B goal. It has to have minimal impact on our schools, and it has to be have a positive ongoing impact on our operating budget. So what if the article fails? We'll switch courses and see what the public would rather do with the property. But then the town will still need 200 affordable units and will likely never get to the point of being able to control where development is located and what it looks like. This town asset is our one opportunity to address the town's vulnerability to development which bypasses local regulations. The Board of Selectmen urges you to support this article. Thank you.
Okay. The Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
I assume the Board of Selectmen recommends approval?
The Board of Selectmen recommends approval.
Okay. Who would like to be heard on Article 3? Yes, right in front here.
A big part of this article is the promise of a public process to determine what the end result will be at the Malone property. And we were originally promised a very public process regarding the use of the Malone property, where all options and needs of the town were going to be considered. But as soon as options other than housing were suggested, the conversation abruptly ended and the process went underground. We never had the chance to discuss and consider uses in addition to housing, such as recreational walking paths, jogging trails, open space for uses such as remote-controlled planes, rockets, sports fields, nature areas for Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts, and many other recreational uses and uses for our town and citizens. Today, this discussion is taking place on Facebook. I would submit it is worthy of a public process sponsored by Sudbury's town officials. This article was conceived underground without public input or discussion and appeared a few months ago out of the blue. We have not had the public discussions and inclusive decision-making we were promised for such an important town decision. The biggest problem I have with this article is that it is being marketed as the savior for solving 40B, but if you actually read the article language, it is designed to intentionally fall short of solving 40B. The town of Lincoln understood the 40B law, came up with a plan, and got to 10% to solve the problem. Concord understood the 40B law, came up with a plan, got to 10% to solve the problem. Even Wayland now has a plan to get to 10% and solve the problem. But in Sudbury, and only in Sudbury, you will hear town officials say, 40B is a state law and there is nothing we can do about it. Larry O'Brien and I worked on some potential language to improve this article. It still needed work, but it was better. Larry and I actually work pretty well together, believe it or not. The new language included the word maximization, which I liked because I know there was more than enough land at Malone to get to 10% and actually solve our problem once and for all if we really wanted to. But then the next time this article appeared, the language Larry and I agreed to was gone. Again, the decisions were being made in a vacuum. The fact that this article intentionally falls short of solving our problem reveals the hidden agenda behind this article. In this article, we are again promised a very public process. However, we have learned in the past what that really means. In Sudbury, from this day forward, we need to redefine what a very public process means in Sudbury. Today, Sudbury's most important decisions are made in the dark of night, pushed to the end of the agenda, labeled miscellaneous, and listed without an actual discussion time. So if someone wanted to come to a selectman meeting and hear a discussion, they would not know what time to show up. They would have to sit through a four-hour meeting, and even if they did, there was no guarantee they would be allowed to comment due to the restrictive public comment rules at our selectman meetings. Today's most important decisions are made late at night in an empty room after the people and press have gone home and sometimes even after the TV programming has stopped broadcasting the meeting. Ad hoc advisory committees like the one proposed here tonight that are making these most important decisions are often stacked with town insiders, many of whom are on the town payroll and are therefore incented to support the status quo. We need a real public process in Sudbury, and I am hereby inviting every one of you in this hall tonight as Sudbury legislators, and because you did show up and you are voting at town meeting. You are a Sudbury senator tonight. I'm inviting all of you to be part of that process. You should be part of it. This is your land. You own it. You should have a say in what it becomes. We are just now learning, thanks to Facebook, a lot of conflicting opinions about the hazardous contamination at this site, and I am not comfortable at this point making a decision to spend money and start the process for an affordable housing development on a potentially contaminated site, which could be a huge financial, legal, medical, and public relations disaster for Sudbury. I am not going to base my decision on a 25-year-old study using 25-year-old technology and paid for by the company that was dumping the chemicals. Once the train for a housing development leaves the station, it will ride through the darkness of night, and one day, without anyone noticing, there will be a construction site on Route 117. We need to be absolutely sure we are not putting people in danger, and especially not under the premise of affordable housing. We have heard that this housing development will be many things, rentals, age-restricted, affordable, to name a few, but all of that can change. We know it can change because we see it happening at Northwoods, right next door on Route 117. Northwoods was the controversy of the 90s for Sudbury. I don't know if Ursula Lyons is here. She normally sits over there. She was on the planning board in the 90s. She's told me about this. Age restriction and senior care was supposed to be locked in for the Northwoods development to be approved. Now, 15 years later, the therapy pool is closed, the senior care is drastically reduced, and the age restriction is being challenged in court. We could make every restrictive condition to the developer that buys Malone. We could make every restrictive condition under the sun with a developer who buys Malone, but like Northwoods, that developer could go bankrupt. The property could then go to bankruptcy auction and be bought by someone else at that bankruptcy auction who then petitions the court and says these restrictive conditions are making this property uneconomical and they need to be lifted for this property to move forward. Conditions can be changed. Anything can be litigated. 40B itself expires. There is no such thing as an affordable deed restriction in perpetuity. By Massachusetts state law, the state statute limits such deed restrictions to only 30 days and not forever, as we have heard before. Even if we build these...
Bob, yep. did you mean 30 years?
30 years, yeah.
Yeah, you said days.
Yeah, 30 years, sorry. 30 years. 30 days would be much worse. Even if we build these 40B units today, someday in the future they can expire and become full market rate units and our affordable housing inventory drops back down, defeating the entire purpose for doing this in the first place. I know I'm not the only one in this room who cares about what Sudbury will look like in 30 years. Northwoods, whether intentionally or not, has been a bait and switch for the town of Sudbury, and Malone is shaping up to be the same. We have been enticed with the allure of big money for this land. It could fetch $6 or $8 million on the real estate market. But that is a one-time payment in today's dollars, which will someday soon look like a pittance for a piece of property that could be a treasure for Sudbury residents for many, many future generations. We need to perform risk analysis before we subject the town to the risk of developing this site. To use round numbers, if we build 200 units of housing, and those housing units are someday not restricted by age, and families move in, and we have, say, one student per house on Malone, that's 200 students, which is roughly about half the size of the Haynes School. Let me use a round number for the average cost of education. I know I'm going to get in trouble with the school committee, but between LS and SPS, let's say it's about $15,000 per year per child. So 200 students at $15,000 per year, anyone can do the rough math on that, that's $3 million per year in education costs every year. We can run through that $8 million in no time and put the town at risk with a long-term budget negative housing development. It is one thing if a developer wants to do that to Sudbury, they have the right to do that, but this is our land, the town owns it. And for the town to do this to ourselves on our own land, we need to be absolutely sure we know what we are doing.
Bob?
Yes?
Roughly how much longer do you have?
1 minute.
1 minute. All those in favor, signify, raise your hand. Those opposed, please go ahead.
I will be driving up and down Route 117 for the next 30 years, and I don't want to cringe every time I do, because I did not do enough to ensure that we did the right thing for the town when designing the Malone property. Chuck Woodard called me yesterday to discuss what we do with Malone, and, you know, Chuck's done a good job with this. He's been asked to run with it, and I can appreciate the work that he's done. And we had a good conversation. But the fate of Malone should not be decided by two people on the day of town meeting, and it shouldn't be decided in Facebook either. The future of Malone should be decided by everyone who wants to be heard, everyone who has an opinion, and every possible consideration should be made to ensure we are doing the right thing for the town of Sudbury today and for the future. For these reasons, I urge defeat of this article, as I think it is premature to spend money to design a housing development on a contaminated site with so many unanswered questions and so many unheard voices. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 33? No, we haven't gone enough. No, I'm not going to entertain that. Right there. Yes.
Thank you. Jen Clark, 30 Barnett Road. I'd like to reference the COF report that was actually mentioned in the Board of Selectmen's presentation. It sounds like the plan is to put a whole bunch of units in, and they're saying that they'll be for seniors, so there won't be a lot of kids in the schools. But the report actually said, with regards to age-restricted housing, while Sudbury zoning allows age-restricted multifamily housing, there is some concern that this market is saturated in the short term. Sudbury has 109 age-restricted market-rate condos with an additional 24 units approved but not yet built, and 159 age-restricted affordable rental units. In addition, there are 96 market-discounted senior housing units. Another 64-unit affordable rental senior housing development has recently been approved. A number of these developments in the region have had occupancy problem and have requested conversion to market non-age-restricted housing. It goes on and on. Basically, the bottom line is every town is trying to do this. Every town is like, we'll just drop a giant development on the town line, we'll make it all seniors so there's no kids in the schools, and our 40B will be solved. But it doesn't work because no seniors want to buy these things, and they're just going to get converted back. And then we're going to have 250 kids coming into the schools that we all have to pay for. What I don't understand is we're all so scared of this 40B boogeyman that this developer is going to come in and put a giant development in that no one wants, and the answer is to invite a developer to come in and put in a giant development that nobody wants. That doesn't feel like winning to me. I don't understand how that's good for us. Not to mention, anyone who commutes on 117 in the morning during rush hour knows that that's one of the worst places to commute in Massachusetts, that area. And you're going to add 250 units worth of cars to that? You're going to need to give us all helicopters because it's going to be terrible. So I please ask you, vote no on this. It's a really bad idea, and I think we can do better. I think we need to go back to the drawing board, but let's not waste $150,000 on something that's, I think we can all agree, is a terrible idea. Thank you.
Mr. Moderator, Kirsten Rapinian, Harness Lane. In listening to Mr. Hardy's comments about Malone, I just wanted to make a couple of points. There are people sitting in this room, people who are watching on TV, people who have participated in town government for many, many years. People take this very seriously. Town meeting is the part where you come in and legislate the things that have been discussed night after night, year after year, day after day. The town staff lives this and breathes this. They get no compensation for making a decision one way or the other. They're merely here, along with the Board of Selectmen and the Finance Committee, to present to you their findings and what it is that they would ask you to vote either for or against, and the reasons why they believe that you should vote for or against. This town meeting is not the place where we hijack the meeting to discuss our anger over a situation or a group of people that we don't like. As far as Malone is concerned here this evening, I think when Mr. Hardy was talking correctly about Lincoln and Concord and the other towns who had a plan, I think the converse situation, and we all know that the reality about this 40B discussion is the town does not want 40B. That's just the reality. We don't want 40B. We don't want affordable housing. We don't want anything. Okay. If we don't have a plan, you have to start somewhere. We're trying to start somewhere. I believe that the conversation and what Mr. Woodard was saying tonight about the Malone property is if we don't start the conversation at Malone, it's going to be somewhere else. And if it's somewhere else, you're going to have another group of neighbors, just like at Johnson Farm, that are going to be coming up and saying, why in my backyard? So you get what you get if you vote for or against this tonight. But my having been in this town for 21 years, I've been to every single town meeting. I believe in this town. I believe in process, and I understand it. And I am only asking you to consider what is at hand and what was presented before you. I don't believe that there's any nefarious activity going on. I don't see it. I do believe that if we don't do this planning, if we don't get started on this, then we're going to get what we get. I would love to see Malone be a dog park. But the reality is we've got to start talking about it. If we don't, then we're going to get what we get. Thank you.
Mr. Woodard.
I just want to correct some of the comments that were made previously. First of all, this was not an underground process. There's been a ton of discussion about this 40B issue. It was a major discussion issue during the election campaign back in June. We talked about the idea that the selectmen should try and take some action. And when a 40B development comes along, the selectmen are kind of powerless. I mean, the state law says the developer can bypass our zoning regulations. All we can say we don't like it, but we're powerless. We wanted to do something. This struck us as the one thing we could do. We talked about it in three separate meetings, voted it as a goal. So this was not underground. Secondly, the idea that we're kind of basically aiming short, I'm sorry. I thought I was very clear. The goal is to hit the 10%. We have no interest in aiming short. There's no point. Why would we do that? The hazardous contamination, I saw all the talk on the web, and there is hazardous contamination in the groundwater on the Unisys property. Treatment on that started 25 years ago. The Malone property is suitable for residential and other uses. However, part of this study will include a phase one site investigation to look at the data and confirm that it is okay. So that's not an issue. I'm sorry. In fact, the business of age restrictions expire? No, they do not expire. I'm sorry. The 40B and other restrictions, they do not expire. If it's an affordable unit, it stays an affordable unit. And finally, the lack of public input. We talked about it in three separate Board of Selectmen meetings. We're here tonight talking about it. There'll be a public process. The intent of the public process is to get input from all of those who want to speak up and from all the boards in town, and then we'll be back at town meeting again. So that to me is a public process. That is not a private process. Thank you.
Yes. I just called on her. I'll entertain your call of the question right after this woman finishes.
First of all,
you need a mic, and you have to identify yourself, please.
First, Jackie Kilroy, Dakin Road. First of all, you can go get each other at recess, okay? Now, my question is, have you studied parking and environmental causes in your study from 25 years ago? Or do you want to
beat each other up? Do you have any other questions beside that?
No.
Okay, could
just
you give up the mic?
That this is ridiculous.
Okay.
I'm not.
We're all a bunch of babies.
I'm not sure I know the question.
Fine. Okay, the question's been called. Does that receive a second? It does. Who wishes to speak and add new information but for the call of the question? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It looks like almost 12. For the guidance of the hall, this is a 2/3 vote. All those in favor of the call of the question signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it does not get 2/3. We're going to continue our discussion. Gentleman on the aisle had his hand raised.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Dandy Pompey, 35 Haynes Road. I think basically I just have a couple of clarifying questions. One is, I think I heard two different opinions about whether 40B expires or doesn't expire, and I'd like someone to clarify precisely what that is. The other one is, a lot of what I heard seemed to involve zoning changes, and I'd like to know if the article, which isn't printed, and I guess I can read it in my warrant, but I'd like to know if the article specifically talks to a zoning change, or if there is a discussion with the article that talks about a zoning change, and at some time in the future we're going to say we voted in accordance with the discussion and not in accordance with the article. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Woodard.
If we come up with a scenario, we'll go through three scenarios to look at and then pick one. And if the one requires a zoning, if it requires a zoning change, then we would have to look at what the zoning change is and what the unintended consequences of that zoning change might be, and then come to town meeting. No, you cannot have a zoning change without coming to town meeting. So none is planned, none is contemplated, but one is possible, and if one is possible, we'd have to look at it to see all of the consequences, and then we'd have to come to town meeting for approval. And what was the other
question? The other question was 40B, does the affordability expire at a certain time, or is it in perpetuity?
I'm told by the town staff it's in perpetuity.
In perpetuity?
In perpetuity.
Okay. Anybody else have a question? Yes, in the middle there. Okay. Could you stand up, please, so we can get a mic to you?
I'm Scott Sawin, 52 Parfer Lane. If it's not unanimous on the Board of Selectmen and on the Finance Committee, can we find out why they're not supporting it as well? That's
okay.
One question.
Yep.
Another question is, there are a lot of other towns that can push back on 40B, and they're not helpless. Sudbury can do the same. Look at towns like Dover. They have less than 1%. So I think we can do better. We can try, and we can push back. We're not helpless.
Okay, let's start with the Finance Committee. Was there a split vote?
The Finance Committee unanimously supports this article.
Okay. Well, did the Board of Selectmen have a split vote?
Board of Selectmen are 4-1. Obviously, Mr. Hardy expressed his position. He's the one. We're the four.
Okay. Did everyone hear that? The split was 4-1 on the Board of Selectmen, and the minority has already been heard from. Yes. Stand up, please. Hang on a second. What was the second question? I thought that was just a comment. Fine. Why are we helpless when other towns are not?
I don't think it's a question of being helpless. It's a state law. If a developer wants to bypass your zoning regulations, they can. And it's a one project at a time fight. And sometimes it comes out okay. Sometimes not. Right now we have a very visible, extremely unhappy example at Johnson Farm, and with the passage of time, there are going to be, I think there are fewer and fewer easy places to develop, and I think these things will get uglier and uglier and uglier. So that's part of the motivation here. We're trying to prevent pain for.
What's the point of order, please? Because the director of planning and community development who works with the 40Bs. Okay. Just for your edification, that's not a proper point of order, but I'll try and answer the question. Town Council opines that he doesn't have a copy of the statute in front of him and is not certain of the answer. Is there anyone else? Who did I just call on over here a minute ago? Oh, yes.
I am Steve Tripoli, 31 Marlboro Road. I have two
Hold
questions.
Hold it a little close. Can't hear you.
I'm sorry. Steve Tripoli, 31 Marlboro Road. I have two questions. The second one would be for Mr. Woodard. I'd like him to address the objections that this lady had about how this development conceivably would be an oversaturation that is not that is what a lot of other towns are doing and therefore might not succeed. But before that question is answered, I'd like to ask Mr. Hardy if he could specify what the hidden agenda is that you spoke about and what you think the objective of the hidden agenda is. Where do you think this is leading?
Okay.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Bob Hardy, 37 Belcher Drive. I forgot to say that at the beginning. If you read the article, and I know Chuck's presentation says it, and he said it in his article in the Town Crier, I wish the article more closely resembled that, and that's what it did at one point when Larry and I worked on it. But if you actually read the words of the article, it only says make progress towards when there's 40-some-odd acres over there, and you know, do the math. Look at what Lincoln has done, Concord has done. There's more than enough property to solve our 40B problem, and we're not doing it, and we're intentionally falling short. So the hidden agenda is to build housing but not get to 10%, so 40B stays alive in Sudbury. So that is the hidden agenda.
Okay.
Come on.
Question was asked. It's been answered. Anyone else wish to be speaking? Could you stand up, please? What's that? Oh, I'm sorry. Oversaturation.
The market question. When we get to the point where we have three possible doable developments, that is, we know roughly what they might look like, we know what number of units, we've gone through all the issues of how many units we can put on the property, at that point, and that's a couple of years away, at that point we would do a market evaluation to see if at that time what we're proposing in fact has a decent market.
Yes.
Rami Alwan, 119 Pantry Road. I was at the meeting in 2012 when the report was presented, and I distinctly remember there were a number of possible scenarios laid out, and at that time, somebody asked the question, if we sell it, do we maintain control? And the answer was, once we sell it, even though we've decided that we want to do it in way X, the developer doesn't actually have to follow through on way X. So my concern here is, if this study goes forward, so my question is, if this study goes forward, which seems like a good idea to me, and the town chooses not to do the development and sells it to a developer, is how do we bind that developer to do what we have, in fact, decided?
There's no way.
Mr. Woodard.
There is no way I would go forward with this if, when we make the sale, that the buyer is not bound by the proposed development that we have in mind. So we're not going to sell it and hope that they do what we want. We're not going to sell it and leave the opportunity that could come back later and challenge a contract or something else. If it's not ironclad that we're going to get what we're basically getting paid for, then we're not going to do it. I mean, I've spent 40 years looking at financial contracts. No way. That's a stupid deal for the town.
Right in the middle there, please. Stand up.
Hi. Joanne Lynch, 201 Pratt's Mill Road. My concern is that this is a Tier 1A disposal site in the state of Massachusetts, and while a developer can come in and disregard zoning, the Mass Department of Environmental Protection will require the town to do a Phase 2 or Phase 3 site assessment, not just a Phase 1, as well as doing a risk assessment for future residents on the site. The current risk scenario for a research zoning, when the town purchased this from the former Sperry Rand, Unisys Corporation, only envisioned non-housing units. If you consider someone living on the site with groundwater underneath, there's a huge potential for liability to the town if someone gets sick or even if chemicals are detected. So I'm an environmental engineer, and my clients that are corporations, Fortune 100 corporations, that have these types of sites, I would never recommend residential. And I'm concerned that the town is taking on a huge liability if this goes forward, because there's so much uncertainty.
Can I respond?
So I guess my question is, have you considered the cost for phase two and further environmental studies, as well as risk assessment, as well as meeting the objective of budget positive for the town, because we're incurring or potentially incurring such a huge liability?
I don't agree with
you. Hang on a second. Address through me. Do you have any other questions beside that one?
I just want to comment that I called the Mass Department of Environmental Protection and talked with the person that's been getting the ERM reports from UNISYS, and they kind of do concur that the town might not be spending money in the best way at this stage because of the future issues that would come up with an environmental investigation.
Yes, Mr. Woodard.
That's not what we're hearing from the people at ERM who are, in fact, monitoring the site. That's one. Two, the ground is not contaminated. It's the water under the ground that was contaminated upstream. It's being treated, and in fact, it's flowing toward, I think it's one of our town water wells, and it's been adequately treated to the point where the site is considered suitable for housing. We're going to do a phase one site investigation to confirm all of this. Clearly, if that investigation turns up different information, then we'll stop. But at this point, based upon what we know, we don't believe it's going to be a problem, and so we would expect to go forward, but not without having first done that risk analysis.
Anybody else wish to be heard? Over there, please. Yes, stand up. Thank you.
Sue Carboni, 68 King Philip Road. Can somebody tell me what's in that groundwater plume?
What's in the groundwater plume? If you know, you can come forward.
Well, I shouted out, and I'm not an expert. I've just lived here all my life. My understanding is trichloroethylene, which is a solvent that they used to clean stuff with, and then they threw it out in the back behind the parking lot. The water does flow to a well that we do currently use. There's an air stripper. You can drive by on 117. You see the air stripper next to the well building, and that's all I know.
Could you just give us your name and address for the record?
Chris Morley, 321 Old Lancaster Road.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard? Right here, please.
Mara Houston Pica Road. In the article, it talks about other uses of land also.
We can't hear you. A little closer.
Hello?
Yeah, okay. Start off with your name and address.
Sorry, Mara Houston Pica Road. In the article, it talks about other uses for the land. That's going to be part of the investigation. But all the conversation so far has been about affordable housing. I totally agree that we need a plan to get to 40B so we can get it out of our way. But how much is the other uses of the land going to be truly and seriously considered on this land, whether it's fields or whatever it is going to be, could be?
That's a good question. Part of the public process is to find out what else we should be looking at. And one of the trade-offs you have to consider is when you get to kind of the end is you're trying to meet that 40B goal, and is there sufficient room to build enough units to meet the 40B goal and still have room for some other things? Now, the property is in both Sudbury and Concord, and we're going to build all these units in Sudbury. We're not going to give any 40B units to Concord. But there are 16 acres in Concord, part of which might be suitable for playing fields, some kind of recreational facility, that sort of thing. So nothing's being precluded. The focus is on housing because that's the goal, that's the issue, that's what's driving this. But this public process I talked about is intended to, in fact, elicit other ideas, other thoughts, and this, you know, we're going to have a lot of conversations with these consultants publicly in various planning sessions, et cetera, to try and come to some, you know, a couple of scenarios that include probably some trade-offs, and we'll just have to wait and see what those trade-offs are.
over in the aisle on the way in the back. Call, the question's been called. Does it receive a second? It does. Anybody wish to speak to add new information? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. Could you please keep that in mind as we decide, as you decide, whether or not to terminate the debate? It's a two-thirds vote. All those in favor of the call of the question signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it does not receive a two-thirds vote. Mr. Stein. Ms. Dufault.
Tammy Dufault, 84 Silver Hill Road, and obviously a member of FinCom. I just believe that as a member of FinCom, I should advise to you that we were not advised during the presentations of the CPC on this article that there was any contaminated water.
Okay. Yes, on the aisle. On the aisle.
Steve Swanger, Bentbrook Road. I guess I want to say that I very much support this article, and it has a long history. I've been involved with town government since I moved here 27 years ago. I've been involved with affordable housing, and this parcel has come up dozens of times as the town has looked at how to meet its 40B requirements and how to provide a modicum of affordable housing in the town. This was the parcel that was always identified as the parcel that would come up eventually that we could look at for affordable housing. As we looked at other town-owned land, there was reasons why we couldn't use one property or another, but there's been discussion of this for as long as I can remember living in town. So this is not a dark of the night kind of proposal. And what's being proposed here is, in fact, a very rational process in which a group of community members would look at what the possible uses are. Now, we could do something very simple. We could plop all the units that we need to make 40B go away on this one piece of property. And what would we be left with? We'd be left with a small ghetto in the middle of nowhere. Is that what we want? Do we really want to take all of these units, put them on one property, have all these low-income folks living in one property, or do we want to make this a community that's part of Sudbury, in which there are a variety of uses, in which housing may be the primary use, but in which it's a community resource? Perhaps there are playing fields there. Perhaps there are some retail uses that could be put there. We all know that just down the street, at 9 Acre Corner, there are a number of very viable businesses. Perhaps a market would serve not only that community, but the rest of North Cambridge. Excuse me. I worked in Cambridge for 33 years. The rest of North Sudbury, which has no kind of market other than at 9 Acre Corners. So what's being proposed is, in fact, not a dark of the night kind of proposal, but a proposal that will take place in the full light of the town with an open process in which we all get to discuss what we want on that property and what makes sense. And we come up with a rational kind of approach that isn't based on single-minded, simply trying to get out from under 40B. Thank you.
Yes, over there, one in from the aisle. Yes.
Timothy Coyne, 24 Taylor Road. Mr. Moderator, I move to indefinitely postpone this article.
Does that receive a second? It does. You care to tell us why?
Yes, Mr. Moderator. I'm encouraged by what the selectmen have come up with to this point. I'm concerned about, as Mr. Swanker pointed out, the concentration of people that in other discussions involving our diversified housing, which I approve of in this town. I think a complete community needs several ways to live in it. I don't like the idea of concentrating a certain, how shall I put it, type of person. It seems to me, from some of the arguments I've heard in the past, that there's some kind of a mentality that someone who is domiciled under a lease or a tenant at will is inferior to somebody who's domiciled under a mortgage, even if that mortgage is underwater. Forgive me, I don't mean to be flippant, but another concern that I'm interested in is the amount of money that's coming from CPA for this particular effort to this point.
I've got some skin in the CPA article. When I was on the Historical Commission, I helped to convince the town, as best I could, that it's a good thing for the town. I did it because my motive was preservation. This seems to be isolation of a certain segment of the town, and I don't of townspeople. And quite frankly, ladies and gentlemen, what you have going for you with me is your citizenship. That's all I care about with you. And that's enough for me to care about you and where I'm living. This has taken a lot of time, and there's a lot of brain power behind this, which I can't bring to this argument. So my reasons for calling for an indefinite postponement now is to put this to some other point so that nobody feels left out in the process. Thank you.
Anybody wish to be heard strictly on the motion for indefinite postponement? Only on the motion for indefinite postponement. Okay. Then I'm going to... Okay. Right here. Can you get a mic over here, please?
Tom Powers, Union Ave. I greatly welcome Mr. Coyne's suggestion of this because it answers a problem that I've been struggling for the last 10 minutes to solve. My observation is that the words of the article are really quite benign and definitely potentially beneficial to the town. I believe that the rest of the discussion has been distracted by the specificity of the presentation that accompanied it, with particular design goals mentioned that would be part of the program, for example, to have it handed over to a developer to manage and to own, because the town doesn't want to get into it. I think it's perfectly reasonable to discuss and to consider the options that can go into the land. As has been stated, a desirable location for many different things over the last 30 or 40 years. But I don't want to vote to allocate $150,000 to throw in a black hole of a mindless study that would come back with the same level of disparate recommendations that we're hearing today. So I think that the indefinite postponement route is definitely the way to go, and to allow the town, the selectmen in particular, to try to develop a more inclusive way of developing options to consider among the citizenry for the disposition of the property and to address the goals of managing the situation of 40B.
Anyone else wish to be heard strictly on the motion to indefinitely postpone, not on the main motion? All the way in the back. Could you stand up, please, ma'am? You. Yes, you. Yes. No, you need a mic. This is on the motion to indefinitely postpone.
Seems to me, Kathy Jacob, 328 Old Lancaster Road, if we vote to postpone indefinitely, we will give up the opportunity of finding out what's really possible for that land and just delay not doing anything.
Anybody
we'll never
else,
find out.
Anybody else wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone? Mr. Woodard.
I just want to remind people that the spending the money, the purpose of spending the money is to, in fact, find out what we can do here, and it does include a very public process. So if the point is to get input on how to do this, that's part of what this study is all about. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on the motion for indefinite postponement? I see not. So this is to indefinitely postpone. If this passes, we will no longer talk about this article. If it fails, we'll continue to talk or vote on the main motion. All those in favor of the motion to indefinitely is a majority vote. All those in favor of indefinite postponement signify by raising your cards. Those against. The motion for indefinite postponement fails. Does anyone wish to add anything else on Article 33, or are you ready for a vote? Someone call the question. Is there a second? There is. How many people wish to speak on the main motion? One, two, three, four, five. For the guidance of the hall. There's no excuse me's here. You have a point of order?
You think you do. Okay, can you rise and give us your name and address? Just tell us what your point of order is.
Okay. Carol Wolf, 637 Concord Road.
Yes.
The point of order is, it was stated that that many different scenarios could be pursued using this $150,000. But with CPA funds, can retail or other businesses be considered? Because if you use CPA funds, doesn't that have to only allow for conservation, recreation, or housing?
Thank you for your point of order. Unfortunately, that's not a proper point of order. It's really limited as to what you can do. So the question has been called and been seconded. It's a two-thirds vote. All those in favor of the call of the question signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, this time it does get a two-thirds vote easily. We're now going to vote on the main motion. This is a majority vote. Can we have the main motion up here? That one failed. Moving the word to the R. I'm sorry. I thought it was the indefinite postponement. I apologize. The motion is in front of you. All those in favor of the main motion signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? I don't think it's that close, but let me just do a head count. We're going to ask you, let's start with the ones against. All those opposed, raise your cards. Opposed. If you're opposed, please raise your card. Thank you very much. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All set here on stage. You can put your hands down. I just counted this half, and it's well more than the negatives. So the motion passes. We're now on to Article 34. We have a motion on Article 34, please. Sudbury Housing Authority Community Preservation Fund Preservation Project. Do we have someone giving the motion under Article 34?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Move in the words of the article with $200,000 appropriated.
Does that receive a second? It does. And can you just give us your name and address for the record?
My name is Kathy Kang, 96 Old Garrison Road.
And you are?
I am a member of the Board of Commissioners for the Sudbury Housing Authority.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Okay. Oh, so this one, right? Back. Okay. All right. So I'm here to talk to you about Musketaquid Village. At Musketaquid, we have 64 units of senior rental housing that all count toward the town's inventory of affordable housing. That means Musketaquid is an important asset to the town in our efforts to gain some control over 40B development, after we've been talking about all of this. But Musketaquid is 38 years old, and it needs some attention.
Some of the original construction was not designed to last this long. We have discovered through some routine repairs in two apartments that moisture has gotten through the ceramic tile tub surrounds, and the damage has been quite extensive. As you can see from these photos, the moisture has penetrated the gypsum board substrate and into the fiberglass insulation. The trapped moisture has even rotted out the wood framing and the plywood sheathing on the other side of the wall. Unfortunately, this is not just a cosmetic problem, because these bathtubs are against exterior walls that are structurally load-bearing. If the framing fails, the second floor and the roof could collapse. We propose to sister or repair the rotted wood studs, replace the wet and moldy insulation, and install new cement board. Then, we propose to protect against future moisture penetration into the walls with new fiberglass tub surrounds. Although we have only replaced the tub surrounds in two units, we expect that all the units have the same problem because of the way they were originally built. Ceramic tile glued onto regular gypsum board with mastic is not a method of construction that can be expected to last a very long time. The grout between the ceramic tile is the only barrier to moisture penetration, and as a cementitious product, grout is naturally porous. Once the moisture has penetrated, the regular gypsum board is not water resistant. This type of wall assembly was probably used as used to save money on the original construction. But now it means we're left with a problem that must be fixed before it gets worse. I want to emphasize this is not a maintenance problem. Regrouting would be a maintenance issue. In fact, this type of wall assembly has probably exceeded its expected life expectancy because of good vigilant maintenance. So with our proposed solution, there will be much fewer joints in the fiberglass surround for moisture to find its way into the wall construction. And if it were to happen, the cement board does not absorb water like gypsum board does. So we're requesting $200,000 to help fix this problem. The only other source of funding we can use from the state is approximately $10,000 to $12,000 that will be available to us in July of this year. So we're in, you know, a tough situation. Now, DHCD, which is the state housing agency, has approved the use of CPA funds for repairs to the exterior envelope or building enclosure under the house preservation provision of the law. And there have been many communities that have granted CPA funds for this purpose. As you can see from this chart, our request is on the low end of the cost per unit investment that other towns have made to the their public housing developments. The last column, you want to look at the last column. So that's it, and I'm just going to ask you to support Article 34. I thought I'd throw some fun into it.
Thank you. You all set?
Yeah.
Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Board of Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen also recommends approval.
Discussion. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 34? Yes, sir.
Rick Johnson, Bent Road. I'm not sure if these funds are being able to use. These are capital improvements. This is not preservation, so I'm asking if it's okay if we use CPC funds for capital improvements.
Hang on. Okay. Any other questions?
No, sir.
Okay. Ms. Kang, do you know the answer?
Yes, we have gotten interpretations from various councils, including DHCT's council, that says that this is preservation in the sense that if we do not make these capital, they are capital improvements because it is a capital investment. But if you don't make them, the the building essentially falls down. So this is a preservation of an existing building. So it is allowed as a preservation of existing housing. That is the interpretation that we've gotten from many councils. And it has been used, as you can see, by many other housing authorities approved by many other towns.
Ms. King, I just asked Mr. Morley, chairman of the CPC, if they have an opinion on the subject.
Basically what she said.
Okay. We're all set then.
Many people have been consulted. Many agencies said it was okay. And she said something else that was good, and I forget what it was.
But, okay. Yeah. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 34? I see no one. It's a majority vote. All those in favor signify by raising their cards. Those opposed, it passes unanimously. Article 35, Community Preservation Fund Amendment, SHA Unit Buy Down. Do we have someone from the Housing Authority? Oh, Mr. Morley, CPC.
Move in the words of the article.
Receive a second. It does, Mr. Morley.
Chris Morley, CPC. Article 35 requests that town meeting eliminate a June 30th deadline for the use of funds approved under this article in 2006. In the early days of the CPA and Sudbury program, we routinely inserted sunset clauses into articles, a practice which proved over time to be problematic and unnecessary and was discontinued. While 2006 seems like a very long time ago, this article was not really made viable until it was amended in 2012. Since then, the Housing Authority has made one purchase using these funds and aims to use the remaining funds for another purchase of rental housing in the next fiscal year. The CPC recommends passage of this article to enable the Housing Authority to completely expend the funds that were approved under the original town meeting article. Thank you.
Finance Committee? Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Board of Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen support the article.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 35? I see no one. It's a majority vote. All those in favor signify by raising their cards. Those opposed, it is a unanimous vote. Article 36, Mr. Morley.
Move in the words of the article, except to change 2008 Annual Town Meeting Article 34, Knobscot Preservation Phase 2. To $3,224.83, and the total to $56,663.
$54,000?
Oh, I have 56 in my...
up there? Which is the correct number?
54 is correct, I'm being told.
Okay, what's the number again, please?
54, 663, and 40 cents.
Thank you. Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Morley.
In Article 36, we're asking the Hall to move the remaining funds from several completed projects back into the CPA unrestricted reserve account. These projects were completed under budget, and the remaining funds are no longer required. We performed this same kind of accounting house cleaning of unexpected project balances at project balances at town meeting in 2010. The preliminary numbers and the warrant came from a CPC tracking document. The changes noted in the motion reflect the real numbers, as it were, generated by the accounting office. Thank you.
Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Board of Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen supports.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 36? I see no one. This is a majority vote. All those in favor signify by raising the cards. Those opposed, it passes unanimously. Article 37.
Move to appropriate the sums as recommended by the Community Preservation Committee in the following Community Preservation Budget for FY15 Community Preservation Surtaxes: $80,000 administrative and operating costs, $1,217,635 in debt service, and further to reserve the following funds: $115,408 for historic reserves. I guess that's it.
That's it? Okay, is that receive a second? It does. Mr. Morley?
Each year, this last CPA article is the place where we do what the town financial staff needs us to do after voting on the previous articles: allocate CPA monies to their rightful accounts. You can see here an estimate for administrative expenses of $80,000. The statute actually allows us much more, up to 5% of annual revenue. In Sudbury, we have averaged around 2% annually over the last 10 years. The unused portion of this estimate gets returned to the town's CPA reserves each year. The second line item is the annual debt service on monies that we have borrowed to purchase land or the development rights to land. And last, this year we did not spend the minimum 10% that the statute requires that we either spend or set aside for historic preservation. This $115,408 is that set aside. We did spend 10% or more on the other two 10% categories, open space and affordable housing. I would like to thank the Hall again for your continued support of the CPA and Sudbury program. I also want to thank all of the volunteers on my committee and on other committees, and to thank as well the dedicated town staff whose efforts we rely upon so much. Thank you all.
Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Board of Selectmen.
Board of Selectmen recommends approval as well.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 37? I see no. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
Just Pat Brown, 34 Whispering Pine Road. This is just a question on the administrative and operating cost. Does that pay for our assessment to the Regional Housing Services Office, or not?
Mr. Morley?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 37? I see no one else. It's a majority vote. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. It is a unanimous vote. We're on 38. These are the, we're about to enter the zoning section of the warrant. For those who wish to rewrite or extensively amend a lengthy zoning motion on the floor of town meeting, please be very careful, unless your amendment is relatively simple and straightforward, because the zoning bylaw is like the Internal Revenue Code. Given the interrelationship of one section to several others, it is easy to accidentally impact a different section in an unintended way or to create an inconsistency within the zoning bylaw. Thank you for consideration. May we have a motion under Article 38?
Move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? It does.
I'm Patricia Brown, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Planning Board. Last year, the town adopted a one-year moratorium on the siting of medical marijuana treatment centers in order to give the planning board time to consider, to designate appropriate areas for this use, and to create specific regulations. We now propose this bylaw to regulate the location and permitting of medical marijuana treatment centers in Sudbury. We are taking this action in response to the legalization of medical marijuana in Massachusetts, pursuant to Mass General Law Chapter 94C. The purpose of the bylaw is to minimize the impacts of medical marijuana treatment centers on abutting properties, residential neighborhoods, schools, playgrounds, and other locations where minors congregate. We can't just say no. The Attorney General has ruled that the law, as passed by the voters, requires allowing this type of facility within any town in the Commonwealth. Without specific zoning regulations in place, Sudbury could be vulnerable to a facility opening in any commercial district which allows retail use. The Planning Board is proposing four separate zoning districts which may be appropriate for the siting of medical marijuana treatment centers. And yes, going for maps. So one of those areas is Industrial District 2, which is along Union Avenue north of Station Road. And the second one is Industrial District 4, south of Boston Post Road from the NSTAR substation property to the Whalen Town line. The third one is Industrial District 6, the Ritchie and Clapper property at 33 Boston Post Road. And the fourth is Limited Industrial District 1, Chiswick Park and Raytheon. These four specific zoning districts have been identified, so there is a likelihood of being able to site a facility in at least one location within each district, which can comply with the required setbacks in the bylaw. Due to the number of protected uses or areas where youth congregate in Sudbury, siting a facility will be challenging. Keep in mind, however, that banning these facilities is not an option, according to the Mass Attorney General's office, as noted in their decision regarding the town of Wakefield in 2013. Our bylaw also requires a 500-foot setback from many uses where youth may congregate, including schools, child care facilities, libraries, playgrounds, recreational areas, and parks. Additional requirements in the bylaw include hours of operation, security measures, length of permit, and coordination with the Sudbury Police Department. The Massachusetts Department of Public Health is the registrant for this use, and every license it issues will include many additional restrictions, which are detailed in 105 CMR 725. Due to the number of protected uses or areas where youth congregate in Sudbury, siting a facility will be challenging, as I said before. Our setback provision of 500 feet is from property line to property line, which is more restrictive than the state regulations, which goes structure to structure. And as I have also said, banning, or effectively banning, by requiring prohibitive setbacks, such facilities is not an option, according to the Attorney General. While Sudbury has not been approached as a location for a medical marijuana treatment center, and no licenses have been proposed in Sudbury, a proactive approach to zoning for this type of use is warranted. These uses may create security issues and should be regulated to the extent possible. So we urge your approval. Thank you.
Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Board of Selectmen.
Board of Selectmen unanimously supports.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 38? Anybody want to know if we can move that? Yes.
Tom Power, Union Ave. I think this bylaw zoning modification is excessively restrictive. I don't understand the rationale for not allowing this such treatment centers to exist in retail areas. I'm not really sure why the special attention to child care facilities and the like is part of the restrictions. We have pharmacies in town. We have liquor stores in town. We have restaurants that serve alcoholic beverages. We have doctor's offices and dentist's offices sprinkled throughout the town that have drugs and other parts of their business that are all medical uses as well. I just don't see why this needs to be as tightly controlled as the proposed bylaw amendment would have it. Consider it a question if you like.
Okay.
Okay, well, this is not the planning
board. Ms. Brown? Yes.
This is not the planning board. This is just me. But I have a couple of reasons why I'd like to see it regulated. One is it's new. I don't know how it's going to work out. And I just like to see that. Another is that recently, how do I put this? Medical marijuana treatment centers, I mean, people of a certain age think of yourself as smoking. That's no longer the way that the substance is delivered. It's delivered generally in food or, can't even remember the second one, but when it is delivered as food, the food looks like any other food. And so the reason that you want to keep it separate from kids is because to kids, a brownie looks like a brownie. And you just, you know, when a child picks up a brownie, you don't want there to be anything wrong with it. So that's, you know, my personal thing, partly because I don't know how it's going to work out, partly because of the possibility for unintentional distribution to minors who, you know, especially if you ingest by eating, it gathers over time, and it can be a problem that way.
Let me just see if there's anyone else who has any questions on Article 38. If not, yes, sir. No, well, can we get the mic back?
Tom Powers, Union Ave. I'd just like to point out that within the districts that you had on your map, there are child care centers. There's a child care center on Union Ave, north of Station Road, and I believe there's also one in the Chiswick Park. So already your allowed areas are being restricted even beyond what the statements of the bylaw would describe.
Yes.
Yes, right behind you. Can we get that mic back? Can we get the mic back?
George Avgerinos, Hammond Circle. Perhaps the hour is late and I'm delirious, but the other side of the question would be, did the planning board consider citing this next to the police station?
Ms. Brown.
Not that I know of. It's also the police station's in a residential area.
Of course, the other possibility is to move the one that's sited in East Sudbury into Wayland. Would that count? Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 38? I see no one. I'm sorry. Stand up, please. Sorry, I missed you. Can we get a mic to this gentleman right here from the front?
Frank Lyons, 157 Wayside End Road. I just have a question. Does having this zoning make it more likely that we will be getting a medical marijuana request?
Any other questions, Frank, or that's it?
That's it.
Mike goes back to the Boy Scout. Ms. Brown?
I don't believe so. Right now, the state envisions a total of 35 licenses statewide. There are 14 counties in Massachusetts. There's a maximum of 5 licenses per county. We're in Middlesex, and they have not permitted anything yet. They've gotten to phase 2 of their process, and they've got 4 licenses that have gone that far. I'm not aware that anybody has come here. I'm not aware that anybody particularly wants to come here. One of the things that carries weight in the licensing process is communities that want these facilities, and there are communities that do. And so, I mean, we haven't heard any enormous outcry from people in Sudbury to say that we want a medical marijuana treatment facility, so I don't think so.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 38? Okay. Oh, could you stand up, please? It's on.
Heidi Unger-Dowd, 27 Magnolia Road. What is the purpose for this in the bylaws, the 4660 prohibition against nuisances about fire, explosion, fumes, gas, smoke? It seems rather excessive. I don't know why that's in there. Can you tell me?
I think we were just erring on the side of caution, but we'd rather have it. I mean, most of this, if you look at the procedures, a lot of them have to do with special permits, that these are not facilities that you could locate in any of these areas by right. You would go to the planning board and get a special permit. And I think what we wanted to do was to be sure that we sort of had everything listed so that people would know all of the things that needed to be considered.
Ms. Cadillac? Aren't most of those words in the bylaw for other uses also, many of those words? Yeah. Yes. Okay.
The other thing is that this bylaw was not, you know, drawn up in its totality by the planning board or even, you know, by the Department of Housing. Rather, it's a model bylaw that was created by Koppelman and Page and that has been adopted by a number of communities.
Yes. Could you stand up, please? Can we get a mic over here?
Rebecca Chizzo, 21 White Hill Lane.
A little closer.
Sorry, Rebecca Chizzo, White Hill Lane. I just had a general question. There was some conversation in this. It discusses what the state of Massachusetts says, and it uses the word cultivates. What does it mean? I mean, there's nothing specific here. Is it a few plants, or is it, you know, an acreage? You know, that. It would be nice to have more details for us because I think we could digest things better. I'm sure it doesn't mean that, but it could. The way
yes.
that it's here, it's very vague.
Ms. Brown? Or is there someone else who's going to answer it?
Well, there's actually the way the state envisions it is that a treatment center has one or more areas that does cultivation for it and that supplies the you know, agricultural product to the point of sale. So you could have that space in, you know, next to your point of sale, or you could have it somewhere else. Clearly, we don't envision people cultivating in these areas. But wherever your cultivation is, those facilities are regulated by the state out the wazoo. So they are, 3,000 to 5,000. Is it 30,000? Sorry. Yeah, they can be any size. But the thing about cultivation that struck me in looking at the state regs is that they state that you have to cultivate in an enclosed space. So, I mean, that's just part of the state regulations. It's not like you're just putting out a field there and waiting for the pass.
The question does receive a second. Yeah. It does. All those in favor of the call of question signify by raising their cards. Thank you. Passes by well more than 2/3. All those opposed? No one. Okay. We're going to go right to the motion that you see on the view graph, and this is a 2/3 vote, as all zoning amendments are. All those in favor of the motion signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it receives well more than 2/3, quite easily. We're now on to Article 39. Do we have a motion for that from the Planning Board?
I'll move this back up. Mr. Moderator, move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Hunter?
Good evening. Michael Hunter on behalf of the Planning Board. This article requests that the town vote to amend Section 2326 of the Zoning Bylaw to amend the requirements for the placement of small sheds on residential properties. Currently, a shed which is less than 12 feet in length on any side or with a maximum gross floor area of 120 square feet can be located on a residential property within 5 feet of a side or rear lot line. This proposed change will increase the size of the shed to 16 feet on any side or with a maximum gross floor area of 200 square feet, whichever is less. This bylaw change has been suggested by the building inspector in order to be consistent with the requirements of the 2011 8th edition of the State Building Code. Planning Board recommends approval.
Finance Committee?
Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Board of Selectmen?
Unanimous support.
Discussion. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 39? I see no one. Again, this is a 2/3 vote. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? It passes by well more than 2/3. We're on Article 40.
Mr. Moderator, move in the words of the article.
That receive a second? It does. Mr. Hunter?
Good evening. Michael Hunter, Planning Board Chairman again. I'm here tonight on behalf of the Planning Board to request the town vote to amend Section 4100 of the Zoning Bylaw Floodplain Overlay District to reflect the updated flood insurance rate maps issued by FEMA. FEMA produces flood insurance rate maps, commonly known as FIRMs, to support the National Flood Insurance Program. The Flood Insurance Program is a federal program which makes subsidized flood insurance available in communities that agree to adopt corrective and preventive floodplain management regulations that will reduce future flood damages. The FIRMs depict special flood hazard areas, which are the areas susceptible to a 100-year flood. These hazard areas determine where flood insurance is required. Sudbury is a participating community in the National Flood Insurance Program, and in order to protect our residents' properties, we must adopt and abide by a floodplain district bylaw that regulates development within the flood hazard areas shown on the FEMA maps. The town must also update its bylaws to reflect the most current FEMA maps. Towns that do not participate in the program are not available to receive flood insurance through the program. Homeowners will be limited to conventional loans and have limited access to federal disaster assistance programs. The Sudbury Floodplain Overlay District bylaw was originally adopted in 1962, has been amended through the years to reflect changes mandated by FEMA, such as these. FEMA updates the flood maps periodically for a number of reasons, including outdated base maps, development in watersheds, advancements in flood modeling, and others. The newest maps will go into effect July 7, 2014. These most recent updated maps show some changes in Sudbury, and some property owners will be affected, either by moving out of the floodplain or by now being in the floodplain. The colors on these slides, and I've got a few for you to show you the different areas in town, how they've been affected. They indicate the changes in the floodplain line. Orange is an increase, green is a decrease. In comparison, between the 2014 maps and the previous 1998 maps, the 98 maps included 815 parcels in the floodplain in Sudbury and 87 structures in the floodplain. The 2014 maps display a total of 865 parcels in the floodplain in Sudbury and 78 structures in the floodplain. This means that while there are a net increase of 50 parcels in the floodplain, there are also a net decrease of a total structures in the floodplain of 9. And before anybody asks, there were 6,920 parcels in Sudbury. So this represents, I didn't bring my abacus, but it's about 1 in 8. Okay, here's a sample of several of the maps. And we've just sort of picked some of the areas. Again, as you can see, orange is a decrease and green is an increase.
Mr. Hunter, you have to get close to the mic.
Got to get close. As you'll see, the orange represents an increase and green is a decrease. Yeah. You can't really see much on these, I'll tell you honestly. And to finish up, okay, while FEMA is not required to notify any affected homeowners, you can contact town staff in order to get a better understanding of your property in relation to flood boundaries. The town also recommends contacting your local insurance agent to find out if your property now needs flood insurance. If you have an existing home loan, the lender is required to provide the borrower with a 45-day notice to purchase proper flood insurance. It's vital that the town remain in this program by updating our bylaw, and we urge your approval of this article.
Finance Committee.
Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
For the benefit of the hall, it's not unusual for the Finance Committee not to take a position on a non-moneyed article. Board of Selectmen?
Unanimous support, Mr. Moderator.
Anybody wish to be heard under Article 40? Where? Oh, okay. Could you stand up, please?
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I have a serious aversion here to voting on something that the town people haven't seen. That aerial photograph there is unreadable. No, back at this point in the hall, you can't even tell which is green and which is orange, never mind what particular parts of the town it is. Since the map isn't coming out until July of 2014, how can we possibly vote on accepting that or changing our bylaws to conform to that? This article should be passed after the map comes out and not before. Or am I missing something important here? Because it certainly doesn't seem to me like that this is the right time to do this. I vote urge a no vote, unless, you know, take it as a question. And if I'm wrong, then I'd like to know why.
Mr. Hunter?
The maps are out. Okay, they go into effect on July 7th. They have been out for a while. And the reason why you want to, you don't want to vote against this, is that without it has to go before a town meeting, so it will not be available till next year, and then you are going to expose these 815 parcels to the inability to get insurance and to be helped if there's any kind of disaster need.
Well, I'm sorry? Not if you stand up without being recognized. Mr. Coe, would you like to ask a question?
Somehow that doesn't sound right. Does the law say that we have to accept this before the maps become official in order to protect the homeowners, or is it sufficient to say that at the next town meeting after the maps become official that we can accept it? In other words, isn't it all right to, if the map that was goes into effect, then it's reasonable to expect that the next annual town meeting should have to accept it or not. But it doesn't make sense that you have to accept it beforehand. I just don't see that.
Mr. Hunter, can you answer that?
You're wrong.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 40? Way back there. Could you stand up, please? Can we get a mic back there?
Leroy Severs, 27 Revolutionary. It sounded like you said this would place some restrictions on the homeowners, and the town is not notifying any homeowners that are affected. That seems like it leaves some of us with out enough information to make an informed decision.
Mr. Hunter?
I'm not sure how to answer that one. Here's the thing. Okay, if you're in a floodplain area, you can probably look out your window and you can tell if you're in one. And you probably have been in one for a while. So unless you're one of these new parcels that has a change, and by all means, you know, I don't mean to make light of this, but you can contact your insurance provider, your mortgage company has to let you know, and the town staff also. We belong to a program, and only people who belong to the program are able to get the insurance and to get the FEMA flood protection. If we don't accept the maps, we don't belong to the program. Is that clear?
Can I ask a question? Are these maps online, perhaps?
Yes.
They are. So
yes, they have been for a while.
I'm told by the planning board that it's online if you'd like to look it up to see if you're in the flood zone, if that's helpful. Anybody else have any questions on Article 40 before we vote? Yes, could you stand up, please?
Hi, I'm Debbie Dineen, Conservation Coordinator. I think I can throw a little bit of light on this. These change in the floodplain maps came about from an act, I think it was called the Biggert-Walters Act several years ago, where the federal government was required to stop deficit spending in their flood insurance program. And as a result of this, they decided to go across the country and methodically take the existing floodplain maps, which are based on old technology, and to redefine the floodplain based on this new system called LIDAR, LIDAR, that is much, much more accurate to within about 2 foot elevation at a minimum. You're right, it doesn't make sense the order that we have to do this, but we have no choice, as Mr. Hunter said. If we don't, we run the risk of the town not participating in the NHIP or the Federal Flood Insurance Program. However, there is also a mechanism that will allow homeowners who are going to be facing any kind of rate increases in your insurance due to a change into the floodplain. There is the ability to petition FEMA to recategorize your property if you can show that you're really not in a floodplain. That wasn't an option before. That is now. So there's some level of recourse if the maps have an error now. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 40? I see no one else. As a zoning amendment, this is a two-thirds vote, as we said before. All those in favor of the motion, signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it gets
I think unanimous, but it's considerably more than two-thirds. Article 41, please. Planning Board.
Craig Lizotte, representing the Planning Board. Mr. Moderator, move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? It does.
Section 4500 of our zoning bylaw was enacted in 1989 prior to the enactment of statewide regulations to manage the design, construction, operation of wastewater treatment facilities. Section 4500 is now outdated, and this article proposes to delete it. The Planning Board is presenting this article and unanimously supports its passage. However, in the event the town meeting does not choose to support this article, a significant revision of our bylaw will be required. I just wanted to give a little bit of background. The bylaw, as I said, was enacted in the late 1980s prior to the development of comprehensive statewide regulations when several large developments were proposed in Sudbury. Significant valid concerns were raised by the town regarding the construction and operation of privately owned sewage treatment plants to serve wastewater needs of these developments. The town of Sudbury felt that additional controls were warranted and adopted the bylaw. Since 1989, the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection, or DEP, has formulated much more comprehensive regulations for wastewater treatment plants. These regulations can be found in CMR 314.5, these regulations include much discussion on evaluating impacts to groundwater, drinking water supplies, requirements for extensive hydrogeologic studies prior to siting wastewater treatment facilities. They also talk about operations and ownership, financial assurance mechanisms for the privately owned plants. These regulations far exceed the requirements of Sudbury's regulations. The Planning Board deliberated this over the past year on several occasions. We've tried to summarize some of the key points that we took out of our deliberations, and I just wanted to convey that to town meeting so that you can have those in mind as you consider this bylaw. First, the town of Sudbury's bylaw has been in place since 1989, but never used. Second, the requirements for siting, design, construction, and operations contained in 314 CMR 5 are far more stringent than those listed in Sudbury's bylaw. Third, Sudbury's bylaw includes an apparently arbitrary cap of 20,000 gallons per day for system size. Based on our information, there appears to be no technical rationale for this cap, and we question the ability of it to stand up to a court challenge. Four, MassDEP has far more extensive resources to review designs of wastewater treatment plants and to review their operations and help folks do that. Five, the Sudbury bylaw could be restricting corrective actions for some businesses that already exist in Sudbury with large septic systems. In essence, there could be people here today with systems that could be failing or could fail, and this bylaw prevents them from fixing those. That's an unintended consequence of the bylaw. Six, with limited septic capacity along the Route 20 commercial strip, the need for existing businesses to install treatment plants may be necessary in the future, and this bylaw could prevent that. Seven, deleting the bylaw, in the Planning Board's opinion, will not encourage a higher level of development in Sudbury. Sudbury's zoning bylaws control development, not this bylaw. Eight, deleting the bylaw will not create opportunities for 40B projects. As we've heard much before, and as you probably know, 40B projects trump local zoning, so this bylaw does not come into play for 40B projects. In closing, the Planning Board requests that you pass this article and delete this antiquated bylaw. Again, if you choose not to, we'll probably be back in front of you next year with a significant rewrite. Over the last several weeks, we've heard from several folks who fear unintended consequences of deleting this bylaw, that it may open up unwanted development. The Planning Board does not believe this to be the case. We feel that we've studied this thoroughly and understand its consequences. Thank you.
Finance Committee?
Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Board of Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen supports this article on a 4-1 vote.
Anybody wish to be heard? Can you stand up, please?
Bill Cooper, Cedar Creek Road.
Question, does the Board of Health support this article or have any position on it?
Yes, they do.
What is it? Yes, they support it?
The Board of Health voted to support the article.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 41? I see no one else. This is, okay, could you stand up, please? Thank you.
Steve Lansendorf, Hawes Road. Does the Conservation Commission take a position on this article?
Ms. Dineen, does the Conservation Commission take a position? Yes, no?
No, the Commission didn't take a position on this article.
The Commission did not take a position on this article. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 41? I see no one else. Oh, sorry, stand up, please.
Martha Cole, 14 Churchill Street. The one thing that bothers me about deleting this is I had intended to write an amendment to say except for the map. And that is because I was there when they had that problem at the Lyon neighborhood where they wanted to put a pocket sewage treatment plant in, which would flow down to Maynard's Well, the town of Maynard's Well. Well, on the Cunning property, you have there's water underneath that property, which is a well which is used by the town of Maynard. And this bylaw has that aquifer protection zone on our map. But the aquifer protection zone map that I bought last year for when we passed the aquifer protection zone bylaw did not have Maynard's Well on it. And the amendment I was going to say was except for the map that goes with the bylaw so that we would have that, it would be available so that if people looked at it, they say, oh, we do affect Maynard's Well. And especially because it's the Cutting property, which is a CPA piece of land, that would be something, a reference that, or a warning that people might need to know.
Okay. Please.
Actually, I believe your concern is addressed by the state of Massachusetts DEP regulations. Because they're state regulations, they don't go town by town. So regardless of whether we keep or delete this article, the state regulations are in place and have been in place for, I believe, over a decade and would prevent the construction of a wastewater treatment plant that would impact Maynard's Well or Sudbury's Well. So I don't believe that this article will impact that.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 41? I see no one. This is a two-thirds vote zoning article. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes by well more than two-thirds. Question. We have four articles and two resolutions to complete tonight. So we need a two-thirds vote if you wish to stay and finish those. If not, we have to come back on Monday and hope that we get a quorum. We have a quorum here now. So do I hear a motion? Motion to continue. Is there a second? Yes. It needs two-thirds. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes by well more than two-thirds. We will continue. Article 42, by petition. Can we get it, and then you can read it from there?
I give it to you.
Yeah, he's putting it up. What? No, you can read it if you have it there. Go ahead. I just need your name and address, and then you can read it.
Bob Weiss, 7 Lafayette Drive.
Do you have a copy of it, Mr. Weiss?
I don't have it. This, my amendment is to see if the town will vote to authorize the selectmen, acting on behalf of the inhabitants of the town of Sudbury, to execute a deed in fee or easement on all or a portion of the land shown as discontinuance on plan entitled the Commonwealth of Massachusetts Plan of Road in the Town of Sudbury, Middlesex County, altered and laid out as a state highway by the Department of Public Works, layout number 7030, for a sum to be determined by the Board of Selectmen, no less than $1, and upon such other terms and conditions as the selectmen shall consider proper.
Okay. It says zero there, but you want we put $1 in there? Is that what you want? Can you change that to $1, please? Does that receive a second? It does. Go ahead, Mr. Weiss.
There was a little bit of a discrepancy, and I was here about a month ago. We went over a hearing. I live next to abandoned land, and I have the pleasure of living next to what used to be the old Boston Post Road during the horse and buggy days that was replaced by Route 20, I'm going to guess, in the late 50s. Paul Kenny may be able to give me a better date. When Route 20 was created, the old Route 20 was abandoned, discontinued, and under Mass General Law, Chapter 183, Section 58, when land is abandoned, discontinued, and in this case it was unkempt by the city of Sudbury for over 50 years, the general rule of land that is abandoned, and I'm talking about roads, I'm talking about highways, rights of ways, paper roads, the norm of a town abandonment is that the land is automatically given to the neighbor, abutter, directly to the north and directly to the south. Problem here is that Route 20 created where it was created. It made it such that there is no southerly neighbor. And further irony, I live on Lafayette Drive. If someone were to drive by Lafayette Drive, they'll see a wooded area, and then right after my home, of businesses and other homes show up again. What happened is the town, basically, when they rerouted Route 20, everyone else's land on Route 20 became part and parcel of the person that used to live there. My land somehow became an orphan. And the point is that there are electrical lines that go through my property. And I have four children. I have a 23-year-old handicapped son that cannot walk or talk and is wheelchair-bound. And because of the unkempt nature of this property, and I wrote this in emails to everyone, over the last decade, we've had more power outages than any family in the town of Sudbury. And the shame of it, I have pictures that I would like to show people, possibly.
Maybe you can describe it.
Moral of the story is I live in a nice house, and I have manicured land. My land. My landscaping is all up to date, but this one patch of land, ironically, is owned by the town of Sudbury, and legally, I can't go in there and even cut branches, mow the lawn. It's an area that's just not mine, but legally it is, because of abandonment, and 60 years of abandonment cannot be changed. The moral of the story is, in the last decade, there have been trees, branches, whatever, that has fallen on these electrical lines and caused power outages that not only harmed me, my family, having to move my handicapped child to a hotel for extended periods of time. And the reason why it takes so long for my property to be fixed is it's a matter of whenever there's outages, and you know there were plenty a couple of years ago, the people that are most affected get served first by EdStar. My power line puts me down and maybe five or six other people. And there have been many an occasion, my son will tell you, where we've gone a week without electricity. And it's only because of, I don't want to say this in a derogatory fashion, but it's because of negligence in not upkeeping certain branches and whatnot that will catch these lines, which I have all the ability to do on a daily, weekly, monthly basis as a good steward of the property. Also, the way that this odd piece is situated, it leads to people parking on the side of the piece where we have to chase them out of the neighborhood. It's a lot easier to explain if we had pictures and I could, or if everybody in the room drove by, come on over one day. It's just an odd position that we're in. There's no functional use for this little piece of land that I'm talking about. It's not going to create an extra house lot. It's not going to create anything. But what it will create, and NSTAR will agree with me, and so will Comcast, it'll create a situation where there's less power outages for me and neighbors. It will save NSTAR money. It will save Comcast money. And having attended this meeting for a few days, this is my first time going to the full town meeting. After 41 articles, and I being the 42nd, there have been 41 articles asking for you to vote for money to give to the town. I'm now going to ask you to vote for no money for the town because I'm going to do the work and I'm going to pay for it. I want to help the neighborhood out. I wrote a long email. The moral of the story is there's been vagrants on the land because of the way that it's situated, illegal parking, power outages, and I own a very nice property, and I take good care of my property. And this one little piece, not only is it a nuisance, but it has no value, and I'm sure there's going to be issues when I ask people very simply that...
No, you can't call a question. Please go ahead. Go ahead.
When I ask everybody in the audience, give me the land for free, because I deserve it because of what happened, I will defend that line by saying, if you go up and down Route 20, a mile north, south, east, west, I'm sorry, east or west, everyone else on that street got the land that was part of the old Route 20 that merged over. Somehow by accident, nobody did this with my land. I asked for this 10 years ago, as Jody can attest to, and I recently researched the rules of abandonment by state and city governments. Legally, the land is mine if I were to go to land court, but I don't want to waste time, money, or effort. It has no value. If somebody doesn't want to give it to me by free, I'm losing my voice. If someone does not want to vote to give this land to me and my family for free via deed, I simply ask for an easement. That easement allows me to mow the lawn, cut down branches that are going to hit high wires that are going to cause me and you and NSTAR and Comcast money. And if NSTAR and Comcast spend excessive money, which I'll bet it's been over 100 grand of unnecessary money, it's going to raise our electric bill. We all know that. I also believe that I have a right to protect my family. I brought it up that there's been issues of people hanging around on this small plot of land. And also, if you know the entrance to Lafayette Drive, or if there's anyone here from the neighborhood, my landscaping that area, which is the beginning of moving into a development that encompasses Washington Road and Revere and a number of other streets, it's a good thing for myself. It's a good thing for that neighborhood. And it could be good if the person who also has the same situation with that parallel strip, the landscape company, if they had the opportunity to landscape that area, it would certainly beautify an area, and Sudbury can get it done for free. So I ask, deed me the property. I know it sounds terrible that somebody gets something for free, but the rules of abandonment say I'm entitled to it, but I do not want to waste my time in land court. So I ask the selectmen to do me a favor and save me the trouble. If they don't want to do that, if you don't want to do that, an easement is a common sense solution to a 60-year-old problem and a 12-year problem for myself since I built the home on that street, and that's all I ask.
Okay. Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends disapproval for this article.
Board of Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen recommend disapproval of this petition.
Okay. Anybody wish to be heard on this article? Yes, sir.
On, right? Yeah, there we go. Chris Morley, 3210 Lancaster Road. A comment and a question. Can I do it in that order?
Sure.
The comment is that nothing personal, but in the absence of documentation, I don't accept your historical analysis or your legal analysis or your assessment that the property has no value. Secondly, for the information for the hall, is it not true that you've been trying to sell this property?
I have been trying to sell this property. It has nothing to do with that. I asked for this land to be recognized 10
Weiss,
years ago.
Mr. Weiss, you need my permission to respond. So the answer is that you have been trying to sell a house?
I put the home on the market about a year ago.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 42? Yes. Can you get a mic over there, please?
Bill Cooper, Cedar Creek Road. Will the Selectmen and the Finance Committee please explain why they were against this?
Okay. Do you want to start with the Selectmen?
Somebody? Sure.
Yes. Mr. Simon?
Yes. The this land runs in large part parallel to Route 20. If you're going westbound, it's on the right-hand side of the road, just after where Lafayette Drive begins. That particular segment of land may be used for a sewer line, as we've talked about, possibly putting a sewer along Route 20, and the sewer line would go right along within that strip of land. Also, that strip may be used for a pumping station to elevate should the sewage go out to the easterly treatment plant in Marlboro. Also, the land is in a natural condition. It provides what I would call a privacy barrier to the other houses on Lafayette Drive and further back. Also, we had asked the petitioner to participate in the costs of doing the work required by the town to convey the land, such as preparing the documents and doing the land survey, and he has decided not to participate in those costs. And for those reasons, we recommend that this petition not be granted.
Mr. Simon, was the board split or was it unanimous?
It was a unanimous vote.
Finance Committee, could we have someone speak?
Sure. The Finance Committee unanimously disapproved of the article, echoing Selectman Simon's. Pardon me? Two people missing. I apologize. I've got a wrong number in front of me here. Very similar to what Selectman Simons mentioned, that we typically don't give town assets away for nothing. And secondarily, as the co-chairman of the Sewer Steering Committee, this property could come into play with a connection to Marlboro's easterly treatment facility. Therefore, we would not want to give it up in any way, shape, or fashion under that context.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 42? I see no one. Mr. Weiss, I'll give you 30 seconds to conclude.
As a matter of record, I asked for this land 10 years ago. As a matter of record, the law, Paul Kennedy, I spoke with him about this, the abandonment is 60 years old, and all of a sudden they want the land now, but they haven't for 60 years. The land court, if they look at the records and title search of this property, which I believe the town of Sudbury already has done, the rules are clear. It goes to the neighbor to the north and south that are the abutters to the abandonment, and I was harmed by this abandonment. And out of respect for the people in the town that don't feel like giving me something for free, which I understand, even though I may legally be entitled to it, asking for a simple easement to do the right thing, not only for myself, but the electric company, Comcast, et cetera, is the right thing to do, and for privacy issues that my family has. But more importantly,
Mr. White,
the sewer issue has nothing to do with my land. That's okay. A matter of... if the town were to want a sewer, they have the right to take any of our lands.
Okay. That was more than the 30 seconds. There were no further questions before, so we're going to go to a vote.
This is a deed or an easement is a two-thirds vote. So if that's not in the affirmative, the motion fails. All those in favor of the motion as shown on the view graph signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. It's defeated overwhelmingly. Can we go on to Article 43, please? Anyone have a... Oh. 43. This applies to both 43 and 44. These are non-binding resolutions. There'll be a total of up to 5 minutes presentation by the presenter of the resolution. And we'll make a motion, but there's really no need for a motion. There's no need for a second. There's on this kind of resolution. They're non-binding, but it gives the powers that be a sense of the hall. Then we'll get the Finance Committee position, Selectman's position, and as we've done in at least the last 5 years, there'll be no amendment, no debate, no head count. I'll give an estimate of the vote, and that's the end. That's what we've always done with resolutions in the last 5 years. Mr. DePompei, there's something up there if you think that's right.
I request the Board of Selectmen consider the matter contained in the resolution as it is printed in the warrant.
Okay. I don't need a second. You have up to 5 minutes, Mr. DePompei.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. My name is Dan DePompei, 35 Haynes Road. I am not the petitioner in this article. The petitioner had a family conflict and called me just before I left to come to town meeting and asked me to present the resolution. The petitioner is Susan Doherty of Concord Road, and her incentive to put this resolution before the town and before the selectmen was the recent instance of the property in the historic town center that was Chapter 61 that the town decided not to purchase. The town had first refusal, and the town chose not to purchase the property. The property has subsequently been sold to a contractor. Without getting back into the debate of the pros and the cons of that decision, I was involved in some of the discussions leading up to that decision, and it seemed to me, and it certainly seemed to Ms. Doherty, who I'm representing, that there were a lot of timing difficulties that were created. And because of these timing difficulties, the selectmen were put in a position to where, if I understand it, if I remember it correctly, in order to purchase the property, they almost, if they wanted to purchase it outright, had that been their decision, they would not have had the cash resources immediately available. And because they didn't have the cash resources, they'd have to call a special meeting. But the cash was going to come from the Community Preservation Commission, and it wasn't really, the timing was such that it was difficult for Community Preservation Commission to get involved in the whole thing. In any case, what this article is requesting that the selectmen and the town consider is that we put together a policy such as is currently included. I know the policy that's in here is currently a bylaw in another town. However, once again, and this is me speaking on behalf of Ms. Doherty, I don't think she's insisting that this be the policy. I think this policy is probably too long and too difficult for any of us that are left in this room to understand. But the request is that the town and the Board of Selectmen consider a policy, a uniform policy, to make it possible to consider and to purchase, should we choose to purchase, these 61A properties that come up. Thank you.
Finance Committee have a position?
FinCom takes no position.
Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen voted not to support the resolution. We had some concerns, as Mr. DePompei said, about the language and the complexity and the unintended consequences that could bring. However, we had a good discussion about it, and we did decide to adopt a selectman policy that when a Chapter 61A notice comes into the selectman's office, we will act on that promptly, and we will schedule a public hearing at the next possible meeting of the Board of Selectmen no later than 45 days. That allows the public hearing to occur, everyone who's concerned about the property to come speak, and then the selectman can gather all that information and have enough runway ahead of us to make a decision, hopefully, and do what we need to do.
Okay, we have to vote now. It's a resolution. It's non-binding. All those in favor of the resolution signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it's defeated overwhelmingly. We'll now move on to resolution on Article 44. Do we have any? Someone's going to make that. It's Mr. Vanderslice. Dick? Mr. Vanderslice? Is that okay for you? Can you?
Yes, Mr. Moderator, move in the words of the resolution.
Thank you. We don't need a second. Why don't you go ahead and give your up to 5 minutes presentation, please? You probably, for the record, want to identify yourself, sir.
Richard Vanderslice, 96 Dudley Road.
Thank you.
I'm a member of Sustainable Sudbury and also a member of 350massachusetts.org. We're strictly environmental organizations, nonprofits. Sustainable Sudbury is proposing Sudbury be a leader in climate change by supporting fossil fuel divestment in the state. We're requesting a vote urging the selectmen to endorse fossil fuel divestment of state pension funds over 5 years. This bill, as Senate 1225, is in committee. Its consideration has been extended to June, implying that it's being taken seriously. Why are we requesting this? In 2007, New York Times reported that international climate scientists have concluded that global warming is unequivocal and caused by human activity. The resilience of our environment is likely to be exceeded by wildfires, drought, and floods caused by climate change. We are seeing this daily around the world from hurricanes and droughts. Almost every government in the world, including ours, agrees that warming above 2 degrees Celsius would be unsafe. In 2009, the Copenhagen Accord received pledges from countries to reduce fossil fuel use in order to avoid this. Because of that, disasters like Exxon Valdez, the BP oil spill, along with the massive fluctuations in supply and demand of coal, oil, and gas make energy markets volatile and therefore risky. General Electric's ex-president, Jeffrey Immelt, said in 2012, these things can go on in and out of style from a political point and social standpoint, and people who can see through the troughs are going to make a lot of money in renewable energy. Renewable portfolio standards is a target and enforcement mechanism for obtaining a fixed percentage of the state's electric power mix from renewables. Divestment is a proven moral, political, and economic strategy, just like banning smoking in public places, fighting for civil rights in America, and ending some things like apartheid in South Africa. The more we can make it a moral issue, the more we can push society into action. These 21 cities and towns have already agreed to fossil fuel divestment. Many others, such as Concord, are voting on this, even as we are tonight. Our Treasury, Steve Grossman, 5 Massachusetts towns and cities, 50 state legislators, and 33 organizations so far have endorsed divestment. It's not a future we can live with, not something we should invest in. What will our children say when they find out we knew and did nothing about it? Let's make Sudbury's voice heard. It's not binding. It urges. 2 pieces of action we need to take. 1, support Beacon Hill Initiative for statewide divestment. That is Senate 1225. And 2, send copies of this resolution to all Sudbury's national and state representatives. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're now going to, Finance Committee.
Finance Committee takes no position.
Board of Selectmen?
By a vote of 4-1, Board of Selectmen take no position.
Take no position. Vote of 4-1. So we're now going right to a show of hands, please. All those in favor of the resolution, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, the resolution passes by well more than a majority. We're now going to move on to just a few very, very brief, give me 1 minute, administrative matters. Before we take up these last three articles, I'd like to thank all those people who helped with town meeting. Particularly, I'd like to thank each of you for coming to town meeting to exercise your right to legislate, and thank you all very much for staying this late. As I've said at every town meeting, every year that I've presided, I'm very proud to be your moderator, mostly because voters at this town meeting virtually always do what's fair. It's fair. So therefore, I'm announcing before you, who have been so active in attending town meeting, that I will not be a candidate for re-election for moderator next March. This will be my last town meeting that I'm presiding at, the last annual town meeting. I decided quite a while ago that I wanted to serve 10 years, and believe it or not, those 10 years are up. My decision has nothing to do with my health, which is good, my family, but you're better off asking my wife of 47 years, or my profession, where I'm still working full-time as an attorney. It is time for this body, this august body, to hear a new presiding voice. 375 years from now. You're all out of order. Article 45. Mr. DePompei, Article 45.
Danny Pompei, 35 Haynes Road. Mr. Moderator, I move in the words of the article.
Does this receive a second? Yes, it does. Mr. DePompei, what I didn't do before and I should have is I'm going to ask a question. Asking to utilize $200,000 of CPC money.
I understand.
So I need to ask them if they have an affirmative recommendation, without which you can't go forward. Mr. Morley of the CPC.
The CPC voted not to support this. I did in a detailed email urge Dan to come before us through the regular process next year if he's interested, but this is not the way to do it. Thank you.
Okay, as you noted in on page 47 of the warrant, the town council has opined that without an affirmative recommendation of the CPC, this article cannot go forward because it wouldn't be legal. There's three different kinds of illegality. One is that something that has a condition precedent. In lay terms, the best example is a zoning amendment that you heard from the planning board. If they didn't have a public hearing, that's a condition precedent to bringing a zoning amendment according to Mass General Laws Chapter 48. If they didn't have that hearing, I wouldn't allow them to go forward with their zoning amendment. You couldn't even hear it. And every year I ask Ms. Kavlak to send me copies of the public hearing notice and the fact that the public hearing was held on a timely manner. That's a condition precedent. You can't go forward. This is the same thing as that. There are other things that may be illegal if an amendment to the regular bylaw. It may be illegal if you pass it, but I'm still going to let that go forward in case you want to send a message to someone. There's nothing that type of illegality you can vote on if you so choose. But this kind of illegality you cannot. State law prohibits it. So I'm sorry, Mr. DePompei, but why don't we move on to Article 46.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. It all gets very complicated. Dandy Pompey, 35 Haynes Road. I move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? It does. Yes, sir.
Well, since we have plenty of time, let's just read the article. The town of Sudbury will be the applicant for permitting for all design construction projects that are funded either in part or in whole with community preservation funding. As the applicant, the town of Sudbury will adhere to all requirements of the wetlands administrative bylaws. CPC projects are local preservation, recreation, and housing projects. Sudbury's wetland administrative bylaws were written and enacted specifically to protect and preserve Sudbury's unique environment. I believe it is appropriate that local projects funded with community preservation funds comply with the local wetland administrative bylaws. That's really the entire presentation. The rest is just going to be discussion. The town council believes that the bylaw already covers what I am asking for. Excuse me, can I interpret that? Or? He's not listening.
I'm sorry. Are you talking to me?
No, I just made a statement. I wondered if it was acceptable, but nobody heard it.
I'm sorry. What was the statement? I apologize.
Well, my statement was town council has interpreted that what I'm asking for in this bylaw is already covered by the bylaw. Therefore, what I'm asking for is not appropriate. I believe what I'm asking for is appropriate. This is probably not the proper forum to get into the technicalities of the argument. However, in a simplified form, I believe it's possible for any of us to craft legislation that would utilize community preservation funds for local projects, and then for those local projects, through our own actions, to be absorbed as state projects. And then when the state comes in, the state is the applicant, and the state does not comply with the local bylaws. And specifically, one of the areas where I see this difficulty is with the MassDOT rail trail. Don't misunderstand me, I'm not against rail trails, but I'm against MassDOT having the legal and the technical management authority over the rail trail.
Okay. Finance Committee?
I'll comment, but I believe the article that's presented is 46, and we're talking about 45. I just want to confirm.
No, we're talking about 46. 45 we've taken care of already.
46, my apologies. Clarification. FinCom takes no position on this article.
Thank you. Board of Selectmen?
By a vote of 4-1, the Board of Selectmen do not support this article.
Okay. Before we get into a discussion, this was the second type of illegality. There's no condition preceding, so I'm going to allow it to go forward. And town council has opined on page 47 of the warrant that this, if passed, this would not be a legal amendment to the bylaw. I'm going to ask town council to tell us why he has that opinion.
Mr. Moderator, the present article would not be a valid amendment to the Sudbury bylaws because the town laws or the town bylaws cannot supersede the state law, which you have here. What this bylaw is asking to do is to have all applicants who use CPA funds, that the town is supposed to be the applicant. You can't do that. You can't make the town the applicant for anybody. For example, if the state were to come in and be doing doing a rail trail, what would happen is that under this bylaw, the town would be required to be the permit authority and therefore subject to all the bylaws of the town. You can't do that. If the state comes in or the state has regulations, they supersede the regulations for the town because the town is a part of the state and it's, in effect, sovereign immunity to an extent. So what we have here is that it's that all permit seekers would, if they're not, if they have town funds or not, or CPA funds or not, they would in fact have to abide by all the bylaws. If the state came in and were going to do it, or some other organization, such as the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School, they would come in, and this bylaw would require that they, that the town be the permitting authority. The town can't be the permitting authority, but those organizations would have the same effect as the state because they are creatures of the state. If the church down the town center, the Unitarian Church, came in, they would have to be, the town would again have to be the appointing permitting authority, and the suggestion is that they would have to then comply with all the laws. If the town or any other organization besides the state is in fact the applicant, then they in fact would have to live under all of the bylaws of the town, including the Wetlands Protection Act.
I mentioned that what the opinion was, the conclusion, but we're still going to go forward. So is there any discussion? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Len Simon, Meadowbrook Circle. Not speaking for the entire board of selectmen, but speaking for myself, I recommend that this be defeated for the following reasons. For all MassDOT rail trails in the state, including all the portions to the north of those six towns, each time the Department of Transportation has been the applicant. If the applicant were made to be Sudbury for this portion of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail, the project may not go forward. By the same token, if Sudbury were the applicant, the state may lose the state, we might lose the state and federal funding that about $6 million to build this rail trail. Also, the Department of Transportation, from our meeting with them 3 weeks ago, indicated that they do not wish to have to, they feel it would be a problem to have to conform to each separate town bylaws, because it would be harder to design a trail to different standards. It will also lead to inconsistent results, which the Department of Transportation and other state agencies do not desire. Further, the state wetlands and environmental protection laws are among the most stringent in the country. They apply to the Commonwealth and would protect our resources and the wetlands very well. No town on the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail has complained that the state has not taken into consideration their environmental and wetland bylaws. Under current MassDOT policy, the local conservation commission will be consulted as the project moves along. It is not disregarded. This is an additional and unnecessary layer of regulation and red tape. There has been no instance in Sudbury of local bylaws being disregarded on a MassDOT project. No example has been provided for the need by the proponent for the need for this bylaw. Also, the Community Preservation Commission, whose decisions would be impacted, has not been consulted. The Conservation Commission has shown, I view this as a special interest bylaw intended to benefit a few, in particular the opponents of the rail trail, and for that reason and the others which I have cited, I recommend that it be defeated. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 46? Yes, sir. Could you stand up?
Steve Lansendorf, Falls Road. I see this as a protection for the citizens of Sudbury in asking their Board of Selectmen to uphold our local wetlands bylaws, and I'm dismayed that our Board of Selectmen would not be interested in doing so.
Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 46? Is your hand raised, sir? Yes. Could you get up?
Jay Liu, 29 Meadow Drive. I have two questions. The first one is maybe a clarification that the earlier vote on the article for the DOT rail trail design project, my understanding is now that that is tantamount to waiving the Sudbury wetlands bylaws, that they will be superseded by mass laws. Is that the case?
That is the case.
Mr. B. Pompey.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
And the second.
Hang on 1 second. Yes, that's correct, according to town council.
And the second issue is there was a comment made about wetlands, and we have had issues where the town has disregarded on projects the wetlands bylaws. So with the high school, and I think Maureen is very familiar with this, the high school violated the wetlands bylaws. I think it was, what, 6, 7, 9 months, didn't show up at the conservation, and the town was put in the awkward position of not following through. So because they would be suing themselves. Right, Maureen? Do you want to comment on when the high school violated the wetlands bylaws for that extended period?
We will in 1 second. Do you have any other questions, sir? You got
to
ask
both. Okay. I guess with the answer to the first question, I don't know if we should be reconsidering our earlier vote on what we voted.
Okay. Any other questions,
no,
sir?
No, that's it.
Okay. I have the Conservation Commission coordinator here. So if you'll give up that mic, we'll get an answer for you. Can we get a mic down here? Okay.
Good evening. Debbie Dineen, Conservation Coordinator. The Conservation Commission did take a position on this article. They were not planning to speak on the article necessarily because of Town Council's opinion. However, they did have a statement that community preservation means balancing the needs of our citizens and our natural resources with the protection of what citizens have deemed important to maintain the quality of life in Sudbury. As such, the town has always strived not just to meet but to exceed our local bylaws. There are a number of projects that, large town projects, that have met our bylaws. These include the school you're in now, Curtis, Loring, the DPW facility, even the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Government met the town's bylaws at the new Assabet River Wildlife Refuge. The landfill solar array met them, all water district projects, park and rec projects. State work on Pantry Brook, the Pantry Brook Dam off of Concord Road, all walkways. The proposed the town center improvements that will be starting this year. NSTAR, who as a utility is exempt, met the bylaws. The new police station met the bylaws. So these projects were all successfully accomplished, designed, and are permitted under the local wetlands bylaw. Design and construction may have been amended in some cases to respect the environment, and the projects were yet accomplished. The town can be proud of these projects, and there was no need to find a loophole in the law under which to exempt the work. And just to clarify, the Lincoln Sudbury High School was not in violation of the local wetlands bylaw. They not only met, they exceeded it. I will say it was after many months of negotiations, but they very generously provided mitigation, which was a conservation restriction on the hillside out here and all the wonderful trails, so I hope you're out there enjoying them. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 46? Question's been called. Does anyone else want to speak?
Can I respond to the question on whether the bylaws are broken?
I think the question that was asked was whether or not, if the state is the applicant, do they have to comply with the local law? And the answer is they don't.
But may I expand on that?
30 seconds.
The Article 32 that you voted on tonight, okay, is on a local rail trail. It is not a state rail trail. People will talk about it being a state rail trail. It is currently not a state rail trail. There's a long story behind that, but it's a local rail trail, just as they are in all the other communities. The entire trail was broken up into 7 segments, each one to a maximum length, to not set off the threshold high-level environmental laws at the state. So we've passed Article 32. You do the 25% design. The 25% design now qualifies that to go onto the state listing of projects. It can become an official project at that point. Once it becomes an official project, then you lose. Then the state can, in fact, come in and preemptively exempt the local bylaws. That's the difficulty.
Okay. We're now going to vote on Article 46. This is a majority vote. 46. Yes, this is a majority vote. All those in favor of Article 46? I'm sorry? No, yeah, that's a good question. It's the zoning amendment. If you're changing the zoning bylaw of the town, it's a 2/3 vote. If you're changing a bylaw in town, which is a whole different kettle of fish, it's only a majority vote. Okay? All those in favor of the motion under Article 46 signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it fails. Article 47, please, Mr. DePompei.
Dandy Pompey, 35 Haynes Road. Mr. Moderator, I move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? Yes, it does. Keep going, Mr. DePompei. We're doing good.
I'm going to read this article. It's short.
Please.
Thank you all for your attention.
Could you give us 5 more minutes, please? I'd appreciate it if you all didn't leave so we can finish town meeting tonight. Mr. DePompei, go ahead. Thank you very much.
Let him leave. The addition to the financial bylaw is as follows. Additionally, all submittals reports that make up the final town report and warrant shall include any amounts currently held in reserve accounts, contingency accounts, escrow accounts, and self-insurance accounts. Said submittals and report shall also include all unfunded liabilities. This is perhaps better explained as an effort to simplify what you currently view as the financial reporting and the town warrant. Personally, I find it very difficult. Having managed a $100 million business before, I think my board would have sent me back home and told me to rewrite the report if I had to do it this way. Now, I appreciate this is a municipality, lots of different laws, and they are very confusing. However, I'm a big believer in simplifying. The article, as it's written, currently asks for cost center department liquid assets, equity, free cash to be included in their annual budget submittals for the town warrant. The article additionally asks for any outstanding cost center department liability, such as OPEB debt, to be included in the warrant. These two requests essentially produce a balance sheet for each of our cost centers. I've been at some of the FinCom meetings. The town financial director indicates she does. She was queried by the FinCom, and she answered she does produce a balance sheet. So it's really there's nothing new in the data. The data already exists. The town has a balance sheet. This data, the balance sheet data, can be presented in a simplified format with the budget data of Warrant Article 4 and provide full financial disclosure in a single user-friendly table and format. In other words, when you look at each code for a department as a cost center, you would look at its budget, which is basically, in my company, it would have been the income column, but here it's expense column, revenue and expense. The next column would be excess and deficiency. So if you have equity in something, if you have a reserve account, you would put it right there and you would line it up with the cost center. Likewise, if you have a liability such as OPEB, you would put that in the third column and line it up. That way, when you look at Article 4 and you're being asked to vote on the budget, you not only know what they're asking for and what was budgeted last year, but you know what they're holding as cash, liquid equity, and you know what their obligations are going into the future. It's just the right way to plan financially. Thank you.
Does the Finance Committee have a position on this?
Finance Committee recommended disapproval of this article, and if I may, the vote was split. Three voted for it, four voted against it, and two were absent.
Okay. Board of Selectmen have a position on this?
The Board of Selectmen voted 4-1 against the article, and we had, in discussing this with the petitioner, we had suggested that he spend time with the Finance Committee because we're sure that if he has some good ideas for additions to the warrant, they would be happy to add it.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 47? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion to Article 47, signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. Is defeated overwhelmingly. Do I have a motion to dissolve the annual town meeting? Is it second?
So moved.
Second? All those in favor?
Yeah, right.
All those opposed? Thank you all very much.
Thank you to those of you who stayed.